Socrates, the only true wisdom consists in knowing that you know nothing.
That's us, dude.
Oh, yeah.
Sun comes up and rises high. It's so hot, it's gonna make me cry. Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord.
Welcome to the Modern Masculinity Project. Thanks for downloading. Thanks for supporting. My name is Brad Pankey. This is my podcast where I sit down with other men for open and vulnerable conversations on topics ranging from masculinity to women to being a parent and all the way even to discussing whether or not we're living in a simulation, maybe. I don't know. It's kind of seeming more and more likely. We'll talk about it. The idea is just to normalize men being vulnerable with other men, discussing their fears, discussing their insecurities, and finding strength in doing that and kind of working things out with one another and, you know, just being a little bit sensitive about things and finding their voice. That's kind of the idea behind it. And it's, you know, speaking for myself, it just feels good to open up and hear that other men's struggles are similar to mine. But you know, overall, I hope that we can all, both men and women, learn from these conversations. Thanks to those who have subscribed and rated the podcast on iTunes, which is quite a few of you now. Thanks for that. That's pretty cool and quite humbling. So if you haven't done so yet, it's an opportunity for you to support the show. Let me know what you're finding value in from these conversations with a nice rating and review. You can, of course, email the show, mmprojectpod@gmail.com, and get at me on Twitter at mmprojectpod. Just a quick warning here. This opener is a bit longer than normal. So if you don't want to hear it, you don't want to hear what I have to say here, that's cool. I completely understand. These conversations are already pretty long. So you're going to want to skip forward, I don't know, about 10 minutes or something. And just check in to see where it is. But if you'd like to hear what I have to say before I get to episode number 9 with my soul brother, Tommy Freeland, stick around. So just because, you know, I want to take a moment to pause and check in with myself. You know, we hear a lot about self-care and focusing on making sure we are getting what we need to kind of feel centered, grounded, and happy, that our needs are fulfilled, but that requires us to intentionally turn inward and really ask ourselves how we're feeling, right? And we have something that we need to intentionally sit down and do, I think, like truly dig around and examine our hearts. And I don't know about y'all, but I don't do enough of this and generally wait until I'm feeling really unwell. So it's, you know, I want to treat this more like a maintenance, and I figured I'd take a moment and check in with myself now, and with the hopes it would encourage you to do the same. And, you know, that's just kind of part of the idea of the show, is just to be vulnerable and share with y'all. So if you're listening to this on the day it's released, thank you. But if you're listening to this in the future, or perhaps the past, depending on if you believe in that time is linear, I'm currently recording this open in June 2018, and there is some crazy shit going on in the world and at home here in the U.S. And I guess crazy shit is putting it lightly. You know, I look back on last week, and I can't remember a time when I've been more troubled by what is happening in this country. As I check in with myself right now, thinking about what I'm going to say and remembering the events from last week, I feel angry. I feel just deep sadness, and I'm worried about the integrity of democracy that blesses us with the freedom that make this country a beautiful and diverse place to live. You know, on several occasions this last week, I found myself getting choked up, even at work, as I read about children being ripped away from their parents. Brought to tears when I watch a video that captured the terrified screams of frightened, confused, innocent children. And when I'm looking at pictures of babies in cages. I'm angry when I read that, you know, children are being held down and administered tranquilizing drugs. There's even more horrifying things that are happening than what I just mentioned, and which is even mind-blowing for me to say, but it's hard to believe that these are happening in this country, but they are. And it's had me pretty sad this last week. And now there are plenty of people out there saying, well, don't come to this country illegally, or we need to be focusing on homelessness or our vets. And yes, those are issues. I'm not calling for complete open borders and no rules or anything like that, or ignoring the problems we have at home. But they're not excuses for creating irreparable damages to the lives of babies and young children. They're just not. They're innocent children. There are over 2,000 kids currently separated from their parents with no plan on how to reunite them. In fact, we know that some of them will never be reunited with their parents. There's just no reason for it. Simply not interested in excuses anymore, and I'm not interested in being quiet about it. I'm interested in finding our humanity to help these children, to stop creating more human suffering. These people have suffered enough. You know, most of them are just asylum seekers trying to escape mortally dangerous living conditions. How the hell are they going to know that they're going to get arrested at the border and their families are going to be ripped apart for no reason? They're simply trying to save their families from being murdered in some cases. It's heartbreaking that this is what we are at this moment in history. It's just fucking dark. And so, you know, I sit here and just say all this, and it's like, well, what does this have to do with checking in with myself and exploring how I'm feeling? Well, why am I sharing this? Because I think it's okay to feel these emotions. You know, it's okay to feel angry and sad about immoralities that are happening in the world. It's okay. And I share this because I want you to know that you're not alone in feeling this way if you do. And to let you know that these emotions don't have to rule you either. These emotions can actually motivate you to speak out, to donate your time or money if you have it. They can motivate you to make a positive impact, to find your own voice, to help where you can. You know, we need to check in with our hearts because it's where we will find the guidance we need to overcome these times that we feel so helpless. You know, and sharing with others can be so helpful because maybe other people who feel helpless might not know, like literally know how they can help. You might. They might, if you don't. Look, I'm not asking anyone to think like me. I believe that would be just against the whole idea of why I'm here doing this podcast, which is being, the idea here is being totally present with somebody's vulnerabilities and stories. So I'm not asking you to think like me. I don't want people thinking like me. What I am asking of you, however, is that you just think with me. Just think. Sit with all what I just said for a moment and think. And if it moves you, or if it stirs up some emotion in you and compels you to want to help, that's great. I'll put some links in the show notes for organizations that are helping the situation. If you feel compelled to donate or check them out, and simply just share the links, because you never know what angel is in your group and might see those things. Okay. Thanks for giving me the space to rant and share how I'm feeling. And if you're just joining me now because you skipped the opening, welcome to episode number 9 of the Modern Masculinity Project. I can't put into words how excited I am to share this conversation with you all. Because there is no human on this earth that knows me better than my guest today, Tommy Freeland. And I mean that literally. He is probably the one remaining person in my life, no offense to anyone else, but with whom I can share my darkest secrets and vulnerabilities, the one whom I can tell those dark dead dad jokes and get a laugh from that makes so, people so uncomfortable. He's just a person I can be 100% myself around and not feel judged, and in fact feel even more loved the more I drop my shields that I sometimes wear around my heart as a protection. But he just, the type of guy, he just sees my bullshit and he's not afraid to call me out, but always doing so with love, you know, like, hey man, that's not you. What's up? You all right? Just, you know, and with that said, that our ease that we have around one another can really create some long conversations. So I had to split this up into two episodes. So today is part one. We cover a lot about growing up together. We will chat about things like where we first started taking notice of our masculinity and when we first started playing up our masculine side for the benefit of we thought was some sort of benefit in social standing. And we'll talk a lot about our parents and how they raised us and how that plays into the men we are today. We kind of share opinions on, you know, how Tommy saw my dad and how I saw his parents and kind of the interplay of that, and just trying to find some overlaps that got us to where we are today. There's a lot going on here. It's probably my favorite episode so far. So I hope you really all just enjoy what happens. And part two will be next week. I'm just going to do them back to back. And that covers some of our struggles as adults and how our relationships as men, when we are men, adult men, has grown. But for now, enjoy episode number 9 of the Modern Masculinity Project, The Unmentionables, with Tommy Freeland.
Heavy, steady flow. The rock stopped me for a moment, but I weave above and bend below. I eat what is fed me. I can cause a deadly blow. And still the river flows. Only heaven knows where the two winds flow. Where the rivers flow.
Get the full effect with the headphones.
It's like a little monitor.
Yeah, just so you can hear what's going on. And that should be able to come pull out as close to you as you need there.
How's that?
That's good. Just as long as you kind of stay on it a little bit.
Not bump it.
Yeah, try not to bump
Is
it.
Is that too far right there?
No, it should be good, I think.
Good? Just,
yeah, the closer you are, the better. That way I can kind of edit it post.
I like what you got going on.
Yeah.
Underneath your chin.
Kind of feels official.
Not right in my eyesight.
How are those headphones?
Good.
Dude.
That sounds really good.
This is a complete accident that I have these headphones.
Coincidence?
Two of these, because they're kind of expensive.
Oh, are they?
Yeah. So what happened was I was over in London and I had my grandma, I ordered them in the States and then had my grandma send a pair to me.
Right.
And she put a value on them. So of course they tagged them in customs and charged me more.
Oh.
But they got hung up. And then the UK post office lost them.
That sucks.
They told me they were like at one location and that I needed to come here to get them. And then they're like, I called and they're like, yeah, we don't have those here.
It becomes such a long time process.
Yeah, it became a long time process. And then what happened was they just returned them to the States to my grandma. And I'm like, what the hell? And they, are you going to refund me for losing these? They're like, no. So I was like, it already tagged on an extra like $70 and I never got them.
Right.
And then by that time, I'm not going to have her reship them.
Yeah.
So I just bought another pair over there. And then I couldn't resell those. So then I just had two sets of these.
That's awesome.
Oh, my God. Kind of. It's goddamn expensive, though.
Yeah, yep.
But
I was thinking you were going to say that they got caught up in customs and then they ended up sending you another pair. And then the ones came out of customs and you ended up with two pair. But
no.
That would have been nice.
No, I never... It was a hassle.
So you still end up having to pay for both.
Yeah. Plus the extra
$70
or whatever it was.
Yeah, that sucks.
It was bullshit. Man, we used to, Remember some of the stupid shit we bought when we were young?
Yep. Lots of it.
I was telling some of the people in my office about
felt so important at the time.
It felt like, so important. Like that fucking massive jukebox.
Yeah. Nomad jukebox
MP3 player. how much, because that thing was like the size of,
it was like 20 or 30 gigabytes, like at that
was it that
too.
Big or was it six?
Oh, maybe you're right. I had another one after that. I bought the jukebox too.
Okay,
so maybe I'm mixing it up with that.
Yeah. Get, I think,
but they were still big for that closer. For that time.
Yeah, for that time, I think it was like the largest capacity, right?
Yeah, most little MP3 players had like megabytes, 32 yeah. megabytes, 64 megabytes. That's insane.
But then how big it was too, it was the size of like a CD player or bigger, right?
Yeah, yep.
That's
yeah,
crazy.
Pretty much. You probably could have put a CD right inside that thing.
That's crazy.
That is.
And they were like, how much was it?
So
like,
basically, it wouldn't fit in your pocket. Like,
oh, no. There's no way. We had to have a little separate case with it. How big? Because they were like, how much were they?
Oh, man, that's a good question. It seems like at least a couple $100.
Oh, at least $300 or $400,
yeah,
right?
I was going to say three, but
because I remember,
funny, I don't. Yeah, see, and I don't.
What I remember is like, how old were we at the time when we bought those?
And it was a lot of money. Yeah.
It was a lot of money. They're like, we had no right buying those.
No. It was like what I made throughout that whole summer,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And then we bought that little handspring, that handheld PDA.
Oh.
Or PDA, PD, what?
Palm Pilot?
Like, it was like a Palm Pilot, but
right.
It was the other brand. Bought that for like $300 for no reason.
Never used it.
Never used it. Never fucking used it.
Yeah. That was just like a technology.
We used to do shit like that all the time, though, because, I mean, we've been hanging out since pretty much birth that I can remember, right?
Yeah, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, to my recollection, I still remember the first time. Me
really?
And you going over to your house playing on that little basketball hoop.
Oh, shit.
The little kids, like,
how old were we?
Pretty little. That would have been when you lived in, like, what is it, Township? Township 13?
Yeah, I was kind of kitty corner from there. That was, it was on Salmon Street.
Well, I remember the one where you lived at the end of the street.
Yeah, the mobile, the double wide.
Yeah, but then before that.
Yeah, so
you
that
lived
one
crossing.
So that one was, yeah, that was across the street from where I lived.
Okay.
But it was onto the side of Township 13
right,
in Walport, yeah. Oregon. So, yeah, that little house. Yeah. Yeah, so God, I just don't remember the age though.
And that's interesting too. You were younger than me, you know,
yeah,
so
you're
it's like
younger.
Early on I got...
You're 32 this year, I'm 31 this year.
Yep. But for whatever reason at that time when we were really little, it's like I hung around Brett more sometimes,
yeah,
you know,
brother.
Or it was like... I mean, we all three hung out, but I know Brett would give you a hard time. And
I guess just to kind of put this into context a little bit, your dad and my dad went to high school together.
Yes.
And then grew up at... Is that the first time they met? Was in high school?
As far as what I've heard, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, because
yeah.
Where was your dad before? Your dad grew up in Walport, though, right?
Yahats first.
Oh, Yahats
yeah,
first,
he
okay.
He went to, like, the grade school there in Yahats.
Right, right. So...
And then they closed that down, right, like, when he was in fifth grade, whatever that mm-hmm. would have been. So then I think he ended up going to Walport after
and
that.
And he's younger than my dad.
Yeah, yeah.
How old's your dad?
Well, let's see, he was born in 62, so...
Okay, he's only a year younger than my dad.
Yeah, a year younger, yep.
Okay.
Because Rick was a year older as well.
Okay, yeah. So they grew up together, stayed connected all throughout life, and then we hung out. You guys would come up from Tucson, Arizona every summer to hang out on the coast.
And if I remember right, I think my dad said he met Tom and Rick through Uncle Dave, because Uncle Dave was in their class.
Oh, okay, I didn't know
so
that.
I think that is where the introductions came in. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
That's interesting.
Okay, that's where it all fucking got started. Yeah, so that's why we were hanging out. They were pretty close, good friends. Come up every summer to the Oregon coast and you guys would hang out.
Yep.
Yeah. So the earliest time we must have been what? God, just from when we were babies, I guess.
Yeah, yep.
That's amazing.
And then every summer for 3 months for at least 15 years,
yeah.
You know, so.
Well, I would pretty much live with you guys for the
yeah,
summer.
Yep.
I think I was thinking about this. I think I've probably spent more time with you than my own brother.
Right. Yeah. It's crazy.
I lived with him.
Yep.
But
you
yeah.
accumulate all that time. It's
oh my
years.
God. Oh my God. Well, we would, we would just be camping or staying in the mobile home or the trailer, I mean, and or the rental houses and
the fifth wheel.
And,
yep, that was always fun.
Oh man, those were the times like when you just had no cares about anything.
Yep, exactly.
Like you weren't thinking about.
You live in the moment at that time. You're not thinking about tomorrow or.
Well, I never had a concept. I didn't know what was going on in politics. I didn't know what was going on in sports, the sports world. I didn't know what was going on in entertainment, like movies and pop culture wise. Like, I didn't know what was going on in any of that yet.
Yeah, there was no internet at that point either.
Yeah, I guess there was no internet. We didn't have cell phones. We didn't have MP3 players.
We didn't wake up and read the paper.
Right, you know? Right. Well, I mean, we mentioned MP3 players, but that was a bit later.
Yeah.
But
music. Yeah, that was a bit later, and that was our form of, like,
yeah,
media.
Even then it was a little bit later before we got into that. But yeah, I guess we were just kind of super close from the jump.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't know. What do you think? What is that? Well, why do you think two people are just simpatico like that right away?
I don't know. I think it's just personalities for one. I think, but then probably as long as we've been friends as well, you got that brother aspect of it, you know, where there's no pressure, no expectations. You know what I mean? It was just so natural and you don't overthink it.
Right. Well, I don't know for you, for me, how I saw you two, like I never felt threatened in any way.
Yeah. Yep.
You weren't aggressive, like an aggressive child or anything as far as like to smack people around or anything like that.
Yeah,
so.
Yep, exactly.
Hmm. And we just had a lot of shared interests too.
For sure.
I mean, you did track and field for a while and a lot of the stuff like that too.
Basketball. Bikes. Yeah, we had a lot in common as kids.
Oh, man.
NBA was a blast in the 90s.
All the bike riding we did?
Yep.
Building stupid jumps and doing things we probably shouldn't have been doing.
Yeah, I don't ever remember saying that I'm bored.
No, never. Never. And I think, in a way, looking back at that, like, that was probably really good. We didn't have really time to stop and get into trouble or...
You strip it down to those basics, and you just never... It doesn't even come across your mind as a kid.
No. No. And I don't know. How were you raised? Because obviously you'd go home after the summer back to Tucson, and I don't really know what was going on there.
Right, yeah, that is weird.
So how were you raised as far as, like, being told how to be a boy?
Right,
Were you told that?
You know, it was interesting, because my dad traveled a ton when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I mean, he was doing 30 shows a year all across the nation, so... There were times he'd be gone 3 or 4 weeks. And,
yeah, jewelry shows.
Yep. But then I had so many activities going on with, like, soccer, you know, all that camaraderie with all my teammates that it was a club team, so we were together for 10, 15 years.
Mm.
Track and field, baseball.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting. I was always around guys, you know. I mean, it was just like this, just always, every day during school. You know, I get out of school, go to track practice from, like, 3 to 5, I'd go to baseball practice from 6 to 7, and I'd go to soccer practice pretty much from like 8 to 9, like on a weekly basis. So it's weird. I don't remember much as far as like my family influencing me, you know, on how I should be, you know, I don't know. It was really interesting. Even thinking about that, like, I don't know. I was always pretty good at just being me and not overanalyzing it or even thinking about people telling me I should be a certain way or, you know.
Right. Do you think you,
and that's me coming largely from my mom being a, you know,
right.
When my dad was out of town, she was a soccer coach, you know, so that's interesting.
So even your dad wasn't really around to model much.
No, not when I was like, you know, not probably till I was 10 or 15 did he start doing less shows, you know, spending more time at the house. And
did you feel, was it a noticeable, did you know he was gone? Like,
no,
dad?
I remember one time he was taking me to school in the morning, and it was very unlike him, but he said, you know, it's like, I know I'm not around all the time, you know, and I'm always away for work and, you know, something along those lines. And I can barely remember it, but I remember even at the time thinking, like, you know, what are you talking about? Like, you know, I've never even thought about it from that aspect.
Because
like,
it was normal to you.
Yeah.
I guess, maybe.
Yep. For the most part, like, I think you're here all the time, but so it kind of caught me off guard, you know, at the time, yeah. But I never felt that he wasn't around or that impacted me. And I never felt I wish he was around more or, you know, anything like that. I was happy with what I had, you know.
Well, he was always, I mean, and I've seen this in him. I, you know, obviously I know him well enough, but like he's always been super loving and present when he's around.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't, he doesn't like come back and just is absent.
No.
Even when he's around, you know what I mean?
He's pretty soft spoken and straightforward.
But he was always engaging.
And, yeah.
Like
definitely.
He didn't come back and ignore.
For sure.
Ignore people, it seemed like. So he just had a job that he was traveling a lot. But so you didn't feel like you were missing anything from that?
No, but you know, and then it goes back to during the summers, he didn't do any shows and we go up to Oregon and we'd pretty much have 3 months off together as a family, spending every single day, you know,
yeah,
just doing whatever we want to do.
Right.
Sit at the house, go to the beach, whatever we wanted to do. So that was pretty cool. I mean, I'm pretty lucky in that aspect.
Sure.
But had I not had that.
Yeah, I mean, that can go either way. Like, that could have broke poorly for you.
That's true.
Just, like,
yeah, absent
dad.
Like, pushed him away. Like,
you could have been very resentful.
Yep, that's true.
And so, I guess, so when did you become aware that maybe your, or just your, when did you kind of start to become aware of your gender or the differences in that? Like, do you know what I mean? When did you start saying, oh, yeah, this is kind of something that boys do and that's something that girls do? And
probably middle school, I would think.
Sure.
First semi-relationship, you know, which is like absolutely meaningless in middle school. But I think you take more, you know, I think you, I don't know, you're a little more aware of your observations.
Yeah.
Once you start interacting with the opposite sex, I don't know, it's really weird.
Well, I can tell you this, like, women listening, like, that being a boy in middle school is the worst. It's just like the worst, like starting to go through puberty at that time when your brain is just like flooded with testosterone and all sorts of hormones.
Right.
It's such a confusing time, man. Like, you're kind of attracted to girls, but you don't know if you should be, and you're kind of embarrassed about it, and your body's changing, and you just can't control your emotions as much, and it's a really weird time.
Definitely. I agree. I think I was so active in middle school, same thing with all my sports. And it's like, I had so much on my mind that I myself didn't think about those things as much.
Sure.
Going through all those changes and everything. I was more just preoccupied.
Well, maybe that speaks to the need for play time.
Right.
You know, that speaks to our need to have a physical outlet for all these things, if not just to kind of distract us from these, body changes and stuff like that that's going on in our head.
Yep, you've got to have a balance for sure.
Yeah.
An outlet.
So you're kind of going along in middle school a little bit and kind of just picking up your kind of manhood, starting to pick it up from your friends.
Yeah. Yep, yeah. I would say so.
Yeah. Okay. That's interesting. Because I never, like when we would hang out during the summers, like I never thought about it. I never thought about, oh, I'm hanging out with this other dude. And,
yeah. Like, I didn't either. I think that's more hindsight now for me. Yeah. Since you asked that question. But at the moment, in the time, I don't think I did either.
Because I'm trying to figure out, like, there's just kind of how our relationship's grown. Because now we're pretty close now and we can talk about anything.
For sure.
We can just get into it really deep and talk about it. But I'm not really sure that. Like, I can't do that with all the people I grew up with.
No, me neither.
And I'm trying to figure out, like, how that developed, like, or what about us makes us feel comfortable doing that.
I think we're more thought forward than people. Yeah. I don't know. The comfort level, I don't know. But I think that, you know, if I compare myself to, say, middle school or even high school, it wasn't until I moved up here to Washington that, I don't know, I had a little more solitude. Well, you know, I kind of was able to analyze things a little bit more and maybe realized how much I like to think and analyze and
I don't know.
That's a really tough one to put into words.
When you kind of came to that realization that you like to kind of look inward, how did that make you feel? Like, as it, like, comparatively to others, did you compare yourself to other men as all, like, oh, do other men do this? Or did it make you feel other in any way?
You know, I think I compared myself to my friends more than mm-hmm. anything, you know, and it was kind of, it was interesting because, you know, I did have one friend in middle school that he was definitely more of the, I'd known him since kindergarten. I went to school with him and his twin brother.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the only person I knew in middle school that was definitely more on the feminine side.
Yeah.
The only, so he's the only one that even initiated that, that thought that he's different than most other guys. You know what I mean? And that stereotype of what I think a guy should be. And then, of course, he ended up to be gay, you know? So, and we love him. And it's like all, everybody, you know, in hindsight, we all saw it coming, you know?
In middle school.
In middle school.
Oh, yeah, wow.
Yep. But he didn't come out until after high school.
Yeah.
Lost contact. I saw him on Facebook, you know, and we chatted a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, it was, and his brother is, you know, his dad was a police officer. His brother went into, like, the Marines. So it was really interesting, his whole family dynamic. And they were both on my soccer team for 15 years. So that's the only little bit, the only thing that I remember is in my childhood where I actually realized, you know, that he was different than most guys and that, you know, not every guy's the same. And
right.
I'm not the same as my dad and he's not the same as his dad. You know what I mean? It's really interesting how things change through the decades.
Started to see different levels of.
Yeah. Yep.
It's kind of hard to pinpoint masculinity at that point, I guess. Where you're like, well, what does that even mean? This guy's, you know, clearly masculine in some ways, but maybe not as much as somebody else. And what does that even mean?
And some people put on the show to show masculinity. It's insecurity.
Even
you know
early,
what I mean?
Even, oh, for sure. Even as early as middle school is kind of when it
definitely
seems like it starts, right?
Yep.
You get a little kind of puffed up chest and you don't really know what you're doing, but it kind of seems like the right thing to do.
Exactly.
But a lot of that too, because a lot of it's just trying to get accepted into the crowd,
oh,
right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I think they were self-conscious. And because, you know, my friends that I did have that were the more masculine type, you know, I knew them well enough that I'd see them in their moments where their, you know, their more feminine side would show, you know. So it's funny. That's probably when I realized that it was probably more of a self-conscious and an image thing, you know, where they would put on the show of masculinity around their dudes, you know.
And you never just... And you never felt compelled to do that?
No, not really. That I can think of. I'm sure I've had a moment here or there.
Well, I think we all have.
Yeah.
I think we all have. I think, for me at least, I kind of sucks to admit, but like, I, not sucks, but like, yeah, I like people to like me. So, you know, you kind of, if you kind of put on a show for some guys just to show them, yo, I'm a man too.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I like sports. I like
you sports
know.
Too. Yeah.
Muscle cars.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can engage in that sort of thing just to kind of follow the crowd a little bit and get accepted into the tribe.
Yeah. You got to play it safe. Like, you know, when you first meet somebody. Like.
Right. Right. And then the other thing too is around women, you do it a little bit more too.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Or I would.
Right.
I would. What about for you? How do you feel like you changed around women?
You know, I feel it's situational. Depends on the vibe of that woman.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. It's like
we're talking even early, still in middle school.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah. Middle school, yeah. I guess, yeah, when it came to sports, you know, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I always wanted to be the best. I want to be successful.
Sure.
You know, it's going to give me women. Like, you know.
Impress the girl. Yeah. Impress the girl.
Yeah, so that's probably my earlier mentality.
It's weird. So, I mean, we're really just, it seems like we were just kind of looking for attention as opposed to anything else. Like, we liked getting attention from girls.
Yeah.
But we wouldn't know what to do with it once we, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we just liked the actual attention. So anything that was validated, like anything that, any kind of macho culture or thing that we had that was validated, we probably continued to do.
Definitely. And I think that hits on it. You know, it is a culture thing too. The movies you watch, the storylines,
yeah.
You know,
getting the girl,
being brave and, you know, yeah,
right.
Stuff like that.
Right. I don't know. Cause I'm just looking at your mom, who I kind of took on as one of my moms too.
Right.
But she was a pretty, I'm sure she was a very influential figure to have around in that respect and how you treated women. Yeah,
definitely. Yeah. She taught me right and wrong in every aspect, not just women. And so did my dad as well. I mean, he was always
right.
Such and a gentle.
But your mom is the type who will literally tell you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She'll be straight.
Your mom will be straight, which I love about her. She's just like, hey, here's exactly what you should be doing.
Yeah.
What you need to do. So I'm sure, how do you think that kind of tempered your, you know, your kind of actions towards women or towards being a man?
You know, I was definitely growing up, and probably still even today, the shy type around girls, mm-hmm. you know? So that's a tough one. You know, I knew right and wrong. I knew, you know, the right way to treat a girl mm-hmm. and the wrong way. And, gosh, that's a tough one. What was the question again?
Well, I mean, can you look back and remember talking to your mom about any of that?
No, not really. I don't, you know, I was always, shy or like embarrassed to like, you know, talk to my parents about girls or a relationship, even to tell them, oh, I have a girlfriend, you know, like when I first started dating Danielle, it was like, I felt super shy and awkward about it, you know, and it was just like, that was just me.
No, I was the same way. And maybe that's why we, you know, just another level, why we connected a little bit, kind of just shy and just that same energy.
Yeah.
Just kind of a little bit, not low energy, but you know what I mean? Like just a muted energy that kind of attracted us to each other to hang out more. But it sounds like, so looking back on your parents too, since I was around them a lot, that they just modeled good behavior. And your dad was always like super respectful and never like, he didn't display a lot of the masculine bullshit that we see now. You know what I mean?
Nope.
Because
I remember him getting angry like twice in my life.
Really?
You know, like where something happened and,
tell me about that.
I don't even remember the context because we were still living at our very first house in Tucson. So I would have been in elementary school still. And him and my mom discussing something. I don't even remember what it was. They probably would.
Yeah.
And I think I was in the other room, but I remember him like hitting the kitchen cabinet mm-hmm. or the cupboard.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I remember that was the first time ever that I'd like seen him like get upset or like to that point where he like, snapped and... You know, and it was that was like the high point or, you know, it de-escalated after that. It went down, but,
that got your attention though.
Yeah. So, and then I remember them talking after that and I was young, so it's not like they ever explained to me what happened or anything, but that was the first time. And honestly, I can't even, that time stands out as far as I remember,
mm-hmm.
but, I remember there was another time, another moment when that happened and, I can't even remember it as clear as, you know, the other instance there. But yeah. I do know it was just a couple times in my entire life that my dad ever got that mad or upset around me, you know?
Yeah. I mean, he was, you know, kind of saying he was always just such like people say I'm fun loving, you know, the people always use that term. The guy, like if you look up fun loving in the dictionary, your dad's face is next to that definition. Like I just remember him always kind of goofing around and being super light about everything.
Definitely.
Yet being like pretty supportive at the same time. Like he always supported us and getting us into our shenanigans. We would want to go do shit and he would always help out.
Yeah. He does want to share his knowledge, his experience, try to teach us.
Oh my God. That guy with the jewelry stuff, man, you could just talk about it forever with him.
Yeah. Yep.
Like if he walked in right now and you just be like, hey man, tell me about turquoise, he'd go, okay.
Yeah. I would say the majority of what I've learned from him has never been direct. It's me like being at a show all those years and like going to San Mateo, you know, four times a year, but just observing him with a customer and explaining what a piece is and where that turquoise came from and the history of that, you know. So it's not like he ever turned to me and said, hey, this is the history of this mine, but I just sucked it in, you know, when he was speaking to customers and other people. It was just me observing, you know, and I learned so much.
Well, I'd sit back in awe of that guy sometimes.
Yeah.
When we were at those shows helping out, because he would just get this sense of like authentic enthusiasm.
Definitely.
And he's talking about rocks.
Yep.
you know what
tell,
I mean?
Like it gives him a rush to just talk to people.
Oh my God.
And I don't even know if it was about, you know, I don't know if it was about jewelry or the rocks that he was so excited about, or if it's just
the talking
he loves the social yeah. aspect. Yep, talking to people.
I don't know, but I always loved that. It made me feel a little bit more joyful about life.
Definitely.
Like your dad just
rubs
looks,
off on you a little.
Yeah, your dad just looks like he has fun with life.
Yep.
You know, he just looks like whether or not he's talking about buying houses to rent out or something like that, or he just
does always, it all with such an enthusiasm.
Yeah, he does everything. He's excited about everything he does.
Yep.
I'm not.
I know. I used to be, and then I went through a period of time where things were a struggle motivating to do anything. It was like just the things I loved, like painting, drawing, you know, go for a bike ride,
yeah,
go to the park. It was like I really lost touch with all those things for a long time, and I wasn't unhappy, but I wasn't happy either, you know. But it's like finally in the last couple of years, it's even in just the last few months, as far as I have this motivation again, this excitement to get my art supplies out, to go out and shoot some hoops, you know, like
yeah.
It was so easy for a period of time to just dismiss and be like, meh, you know, I don't feel like doing that right now.
Right.
And then it just became such a, that was the response to like so many things. It's gotten such a habit of that. I had to break it, you know.
Right.
Well, and forcing myself to do that opened me up to things that I used to enjoy that I'm enjoying again.
That's good. I mean, it's good to be open to those things and have your creative outlet and. That's why I love this.
Yeah,
starting this podcasting thing.
You've got to have your lows, you know.
Yeah.
So you can enjoy the highs.
You said you mentioned you kind of lost touch with it. Why do you think you lost touch with it?
You know, I think moving up here was tough for me at first. I mean,
and how old? So you're 32 now.
32. I moved up here in 2007.
Yeah, so 11 years.
2006, 2007. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess it was, yeah, I guess it was 2006, actually.
Did you have, so when we were younger, did you have a lot of creative outlets that you, yeah, you did music.
Yeah.
You were playing
I loved
guitar.
Music.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, I was never great at it, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, drums always felt like my more natural instrument, and I went and took lessons and enjoyed it, but unless you have some friends that need a drummer in their band, it's only going to go so far, you know?
Yeah.
My friends already had a drummer in their band. He was awesome.
What do you think that brought you as kind of a young man? Like, how did you feel about having that creative outlet? Did you feel like it was a positive thing? Did it make you feel different? What?
It did, yeah. You know, I mean, it was awesome because, you know, I'd still have my friends come over and jam with me and play. And even though they were like, they'd actually go out and play shows,
yeah,
you know, and open for other bands and stuff. So it was a good outlet. And then I had art in school as well. But I didn't feel at that time that I needed an outlet either. So it wasn't like something I was searching for or hunting for. It just I enjoyed it at the time. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I think it's really important to build those skills for later. When
I agree,
when life gets really fucking confusing and hard.
Yep. It all happens for a reason, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It lends itself to you figuring things out later on, even if you don't realize it in the moment.
For sure. So, you know, your dad is kind of modeling this excitement for life along the way, sharing that with really everyone he comes into contact to.
Yeah.
And your mom is kind of like this powerful figure as well.
And she's the super creative one too.
Yeah.
Like she's definitely the most creative person in my life.
Yeah.
She comes up with so many amazing ideas and just does it. She just executes and like doesn't stop, you know? I mean, she doesn't.
Well, she's one of those people too where you can be like, hey, I have this idea. And then she'll like 20 minutes later, she's like, okay, do this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you're like, oh my God, how did I not see that?
Right.
Or she's just like with their shop here in Anacortes where she'd making all this furniture and doing all this stuff where it's just like, how do you
making all the paint for all that?
Yeah.
Furniture
making
as well.
The paint for the furniture.
Yeah.
That she's restoring
all batch by batch, color by color, you know, and there's like 30 colors in there and it's like, you know,
right.
It's still kind of early on in that stage. So everything's done by hand, you know, hand measure all the ingredients, do it in small batches, mix it. Takes a long time just to do one color. So for her to build up all that inventory, that took a couple months of like going really hard. But she's got that motivation to do it.
Right. And she's always been like that, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And so as a little kid, how do you think that affected you? Did that rub off on you? Did that make you interested in more creative pursuits?
I think so, for sure. And I think that's coming out in me more today as well. Just being around her every day still. You know, I work with my parents every day, so
yeah.
I love that almost every day. I work with a few other people as well.
Right.
But yeah, you know, as a kid, I didn't realize. I mean, all my school projects that required any type of like craft or like art, you know, it was like they were always awesome. You know, they turned out amazing. Even when I didn't tell her about the project and we had to do it 24 hours ahead of time.
Right.
Supposed to be a quarterly project, you know. She sat up one night and on a book report in middle school,
yeah,
and read me an entire book that was like 300 pages long loud, you know, because like dropped the ball on that one.
She was just always willing to jump in and help.
Yeah, yep. And obviously she let me know that she wasn't happy about it.
Oh, sure.
But she didn't, you know, turn her back on me and, you know, she bailed me out basically.
So you've definitely never felt ignored by your parents?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
And I had so many people too, you know, outside my parents that I never felt ignored by my parents, but I don't think those other people filled a void either. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. that I wouldn't have noticed that or anything. I was so active as a kid, you know, with all my family in town, all the activities I did, my grandparents.
Yeah.
We were always doing something around people. So, and I don't know, you know, I don't know if other people were that same way. Was it just me? Like,
well, I think what you're describing is pretty rare.
I know that most people's parents weren't involved in their kids' activities on the level that I was. You know what I mean? Like before soccer practice, they would literally have to go pick up 6 or 7 kids on the team because their parents couldn't do it. So my parents would take that time, and this is just for like soccer practice on a daily basis, and then they'd take 3 or 4 of us out to dinner every night. We'd grab dinner after, you know, because those kids, you know, some of those kids had single parents like Lance, you know, so he, you know, his mom worked really hard like all the time. Mm-hmm. So he spent like most holidays with us, Christmas, Easter, Thanksgiving, you know.
Mm.
So they went out of their way like for so many people in that aspect.
Yeah. They seemed to be very present mentally, physically. Always there, always loving you in a way, like whether it means that means getting you to soccer practice or supporting you playing music or
yep,
and
all my friends along with that, you know.
Yeah, like, no kidding.
Not, I mean, so many of my friends, they just like you, well, you just know, like they love me, my man. Mom like a mother. Yeah, so.
I mean, like I spent every summer for 3 months with you guys.
Yeah,
I didn't even want to hang out. Well, I did, but it's like I wanted to go hang out with you guys as opposed to my friends that were actually in Walport at the time.
Yep.
Like I wanted to go hang out with Tom and Nikki. Let's go.
Yep.
Let's just.
That's how, same for me. Where's Tom, Brett, and Brad? You know?
Yeah. And I wonder, like, we grew up, so they know a few episodes deep now that my dad raised me, just my dad. And I, of course, I had a community of people raising me, but it was only him in the house. Pretty much.
Right.
But I'm starting to figure out that like most of the men like us now who are super open to talk and like share with each other and be a bit more vulnerable, we either like creative pursuits like on our own, like I love this podcasting thing is amazing, or for you like with the jewelry business and like the music, what I'm hearing a little bit. And that we also had parents who were kind of in like these creative and free pursuits.
Right.
In which they're not being told what to do or how to feel or how they should be doing it.
Right, right.
I mean, you look at your dad with his jewelry business. This is kind of how it all started, right?
Always being self-employed.
Always being self-employed.
Yeah.
And your dad, God bless him, was so oblivious to so many different things and culture and whatever, but it didn't matter.
It's true.
You know what I mean? He was just such a goofy guy in a great way.
Yeah. He was always so in the moment.
Always his laugh.
He didn't have interest as far as like hobbies. You know what I mean? His hobby and his passion was
his work.
People and sales and his work and he enjoyed it. You know, like So it is weird. He didn't have a lot of outside influence, you know, when he wasn't doing those things. Then he was just very raw himself, you know?
Yeah. And then you have your mom, who is also, as we mentioned, extremely creative and extremely thoughtful.
Yeah.
But also very spiritual in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I definitely wouldn't say religious.
She's very open-minded.
And I don't remember her ever telling us, you know, even how we should feel or think about anything.
Yeah.
Insofar as like you explore your own thoughts and have those feelings and do that on your own, like there is no one way to do it.
Yeah. She was just more encouraging.
Right.
No matter what we were doing. And
right.
If she saw something that she felt she needed to, you know, give her knowledge or wisdom on, then she would. But she wouldn't try to persuade us to think or be one way or the other, you know.
Right.
But she would just totally embrace and, you know, give you that courage to do what you're already wanting to do.
Yeah, and I'm not saying like the way that we've ended up is the best way to end, that anyone should end up.
Right.
But even with the other guys that I've talked to, it's like a lot of them are doing their own thing and they just seem super free and empowered.
Right.
To just be whatever they want to be. None of them have felt, you know, at this point pressured to be that traditional masculine man.
Right. Yep.
And it just seems to, it starts early. Like, you know, you're encouraged to do a bunch of different stuff and be around creative people and not really being thinking about it much.
Right. Yeah. I definitely analyze things more in that aspect now. It's interesting.
Yeah.
It's like I love going to work and dealing with our customers. They're always in a great mood and happy. And I love the social aspect. That's like the most satisfying part of it, the connections you make with mm-hmm. people. And then there's those days where I just don't want to go into the shop. I want to go and do some work where I'm just painting, you know,
sure.
painting a room in the building. You know, we'll do work like that. It's like one of those monotonous tasks that it's just so nice just to be with my thoughts, sure. you know. So I'm lucky I get the balance because I do get those days every so often where I can go down to work and not necessarily have to be extremely social on a day,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm. You can just kind of disappear into your head a little bit.
Yep.
Yeah. That's nice to do every so often. It's kind of a, it can be done a little bit too much sometimes. But
oh, yeah. Yep.
I've been there.
I did that a few years ago as well.
Yeah, but you emerge.
You fully realize it.
You realize it, but you emerge a little bit better. Sometimes you got to go in there and really stay in there for a while.
Definitely. Learn things about yourself.
And right. Right.
Why things are a certain way. And
yeah. We can get into that a little bit later. I wanted to also talk about kind of the relationship that your dad and my dad had. How did you perceive that growing up?
Well, you know, there weren't a lot of people outside of our family that, that my dad just really, you know, I don't know. My dad didn't have a lot of people like your dad. I mean, your dad was my dad's best friend and, you know, it was always interesting to see my dad kind of brighten up or spark up anytime he was around your dad, you know. So I don't know, there weren't a lot of people in our lives that were that close to my dad.
Yeah,
you know, my mom is obviously the next person in line there.
Yeah.
Gosh, what do you think? I mean,
oh man, I mean probably this is probably one of the reasons why we got so close, just because when I would look at your dad and my dad together, it was that same thing. Like, I don't remember any people sparking life in my dad like your dad could.
Right.
You know, and it's hard. We can use their names, but since all three of you are fucking named Tom or Tommy, we can't even confuse. So your dad, you know, once they get together with my dad, they were just brought to life, man. Like in a different way.
For sure.
And I just admired, God, they just seemed like they had so much fun.
Yeah. They entertain each other.
They
effortlessly.
So effortlessly, man. And it didn't, yeah, they drank beer, they were smoking weed. And we can talk a little bit about that in a minute. But just pure joy together.
Definitely.
And so your dad, I guess, and my dad had a very different relationship from your mom and my dad.
Right.
Your dad and my dad were like the two boys out in the backyard playing around.
Yeah.
Just laughing, shooting the shit, talking about jewelry business, and just being goofy. That's kind of what I felt like. Just they really were able to access each other's inner child.
Right.
But I don't think there was anybody else like that that could do it for my dad.
No. You know, and that's interesting too, because like the beach house we had in Oregon, like when you guys would come over and your dad and, you know, me and you would end up doing whatever we were doing. Yeah. And then my parents were, you know, cooking food and having some beers and just hanging out. And, you know, just hearing them laugh on a nightly basis, anytime they were together. I mean, it was just so authentic, and it's the type of laugh that just puts a big smile on your face.
I'm just smiling right now, man. I know this is a podcast and people can't see me smile, but like just hearing your mom's laugh and hearing your dad's laugh and my dad mixed in there just brings me so much joy.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I think your dad had just as big of a connection with both my mom and dad on a separate level.
Yeah.
Like your mom and my dad would have conversations that my dad and my mom would never have, like on the spiritual aspect.
Yeah. That's
psychological.
I was going to say your mom brought out the feminine in my dad.
Right. Yeah, I remember some of their conversations were deep and
very deep,
very introspective.
Very introspective. Very, you know, I say feminine, I don't mean just like, I just mean
that's our
sensitive.
Own stigma of what we think feminine. Feminine.
that's part of the issue. But just very sensitive and open and spiritual and honest and vulnerable and but it was a very deep connection. Different from your dad's, but just as deep.
Yeah, definitely.
But
just a different side of it, you know.
Yeah. But God, when they get together, I don't know. I think it just made me feel like, oh, this is my family.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep. And you throw Rick and Deanne and
in
there as well. It was like one big summer family.
It was one big
great.
Summer family.
Never any drama. It was like nothing but happiness and laughter.
No, I mean, maybe we would, you know, Brett would give me shit or Brett would give us shit a little bit, whatever, but
maybe drama between the kids.
Maybe drama. Yeah. Mostly between
there,
the kids.
Yeah.
Fuck man. That's why I like staying with you guys so much though. Cause like at this point I don't really have any parents.
Right. Yeah. That's,
I mean, at this point
It's hard for me to even like comprehend. Like, you know, I do think about it, but it's like, that's gotta be tough.
Well,
and I mean like on a daily basis to have that just underlying feeling of being in a town on your own, you know?
Well, the underlying feeling of like, how many times do you go through on a day and you're like, I'd love to tell my dad this one thing.
Oh, all the time, dude, with my mom too.
With
like
your mom, yeah.
Sometimes
that's what I mean,
read something or find something, like I don't even want to call him or text him, you know, because I want to tell him in person.
And yeah.
Now that happens every week, maybe multiple times.
Yeah. So I mean, I think that's one of the hardest aspects, just with my dad. Like my mom's never really been around. I mean, there's always going to be something missing there, as far as like or a connection that I had with my biological mother.
Right.
Never really had a relationship with her. It's probably better. I don't know if I told you, but recently I just told her I don't want to have any contact with her.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess it was hard in that I didn't want to hurt this other human.
Right.
And I knew it was probably
that
going to...
That makes it real.
Right. And I knew it was probably going to hurt. So I'm sorry in that respect that I'm probably going to cause a little bit of pain here. But it wasn't hard to just say, don't contact me.
Right.
Like
if
not,
you feel like that's what you need, then that's not the wrong.
And I'm not missing anything from it.
Right.
Like I don't feel like I'm actually gaining from it, because I don't have this person in my life who's just causing me to feel so much distrust towards women and stuff like
exactly.
that.
Just like a weight lifted.
You know? Yeah. Cause it's just so unpredictable.
Right.
But so, you know, not having that around now here I am with neither parent. And I think, you know, somebody recently just told me that, you're kind of an orphan. And I'm like, Right.
It's kind of, had you thought about that before they said that?
Yeah, I thought about it a little bit, and I think I've heard it before. Somebody, one of my really good friends back in London, always called me Gypsy. And yeah, that's like a little culturally sensitive word now, but what she meant was, is that I've always just skipped around from place to place.
Right.
Because I've never really felt like I've had a home.
Right. I know what you mean.
I mean, even since, you know,
I mean, not personally myself, but I can see where you're coming from.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, you're, especially now, like, my parents aren't around. So it's like, well, where do you go for all the holidays? It's like, right. Well, I kind of go wherever the wind blows me.
Well, you know, you're always welcome here, but I know you were in Europe for a couple years as well.
So. Yeah. I've been up here for some Christmas celebrations, but it's, so, you know, I moved to different countries and stuff, and you're always, I think that what this person told me too was I was kind of outrunning that feeling of feeling like an orphan.
Right.
And having these little adventures, which taught me amazing things. But at the same time, like, you know, I need to sort that a little bit, but which I have, I'm working on it and feeling a little more at home, but
it's a process.
It is a process. But so I guess kind of going back to what we were talking about, whenever I come here, man, it's just like, oh, I'm home.
I know exactly what you mean. I know that feeling.
Like, I can just walk in the door and just be like, okay. Like, no, there's no, like, I don't feel like I'm a guest here.
Right. I knew that feeling very young as a kid with all the activities that I had to do, and it never burnt me out. You know, I never thought this is too much doing all these sports, like, on a daily basis.
Yeah.
I just did it. But for whatever reason, when I went over to stay with my dad's mom, my grandma, she, that was, and I noticed when I was like 6 or 7, which I think is really odd for a kid, but I knew when I would go over there that we were just going to like make popcorn,
yeah,
and watch movies and just get cozy and relax, you know? And I loved that feeling. Like, that was, it was so great compared to my other grandparents' house where I had friends that lived around their house. So go over there and I was going to play with Joey and Andy, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, my grandma's house, I really appreciated that disconnect from my life from a very young age, that this is going to be great. Like, I'm just going to do nothing but hang out with my grandma, and we're gonna watch some movies and just
really
hang out together,
like a place to put your heart at ease.
Yep. So that was a place where I just felt so relaxed, so comfortable. And you know, that was as a kid, but now going back to Oregon is kind of like that for me. Yeah. As well, it's one place I can go even just all by myself and
just feel at ease.
I just feel it. Yeah. Yep. I just feel like just so calm and happy.
And a lot of that too, maybe, at least for me, when I do things like that too, it's just because I have so many good memories there of hanging out with you guys and stuff. It just like almost comes rushing back all at once.
Right.
And so I guess kind of staying on a little bit about the observation between, you know, your dad and my dad's relationship. How did you perceive my dad growing up?
I always knew your dad was I always thought he was a very intelligent guy, very free spirited.
Yeah.
I loved his personality. Same thing. He always made me just feel so comfortable, you know, around him compared to some of my dad's other friends. Some of them, and it's funny, it's because usually they were like the more masculine men's men that I just was kind of didn't click with, you know. But
would you
your
say
dad
you're
was more
would you say you're a sensitive?
Yeah, sensitive. Definitely.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
me too. I've always been, you know, with all my relationships, I've always been the, you know, if I get in a fight, you know, I want to work it out like right away.
Right.
And it was tough because there's a few girls I dated where when that happened they just needed space, you know. And yeah, I was just like, oh, give me anxiety.
Sure.
Let's figure this out right now, like, you know. But that was good for me, you know. I understand that now.
Yeah, because I mean, I asked that for that reason. And, you know, my dad was super sensitive guy. And,
right.
And by sensitive, not only do I mean kind of open and vulnerable in that way, but also just sensitive to energy.
See, and I didn't see that as much as a kid.
Mm.
My main outlook on him was that he was just like happy,
sure,
smiling, and like a free spirit, you know, a very easy person to be around.
And I wonder, too, if, like, again, me sharing this, like, this sensitive type of thing with you that you have, I wonder if us sensitive types are attracted to other sensitive types.
That could be.
Like, we definitely have.
Or you have a different dynamic.
Right, we definitely have a mutual understanding of each other, right?
I would say so, for sure.
Yeah, we definitely have a mutual understanding where it's like we don't have to explain certain things, and we just get each other. And looking back a little bit, maybe that's why it was pretty easy to connect with my dad.
Yeah, I would agree.
But
he was never critical of anything. He, you know, he never would push his point of view on you that I can remember.
Mm.
And this is me as a kid, you know.
Right.
It was interesting because, you know, as I got older, say 15, 16, and I got to see your dad and he was living in the Bay Area, you know, I got to see him a couple times a year when we'd go down for the show. And that was probably the first time that we started to interact more on a communication level.
Yeah.
Not just like, you know, he was my dad's best friend and he's around and, you know, and I love that. I loved him. You had an awesome relationship with your dad in that aspect. But it wasn't until we got older that, I don't know, we had a few deeper conversations. Sure. And he's just so supportive. You know, I remember him telling me, like, you know, and this is after, I think, when we first moved up to Washington. So I was having a little harder time and never told him that or anything. But it's like he took that moment to tell me how awesome I am, you know, what a cool guy I am and what I've got going for me. And, you know, just that he did that. Like, I don't know, it was kind of from that point on a different dynamic, like when I would see your dad and hang around him. And I don't know, he was just always awesome in that way.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that.
no problem.
And then I guess staying about when we're a little younger, how did you view him with Brett and I? Did you ever think about that? Like, oh, how he's treating us or what he was like when he was interacting with us?
Gosh, you know, I feel like a few times I did, like, you know, I was aware as a kid that he was a single dad raising two sons. So I did see that, you know, you guys probably had more of like, and maybe Brett even more, had more of a masculine side. Like,
definitely Brett.
And I thought it came from like two boys being raised by a dad. You know what I mean? But now when I see that, that's just always kind of who Brett was.
Yeah.
And still who he is. And so, yeah, it's, I don't remember anything specific that I would remember as far as me taking note of, you know, something I thought about how your dad was raising you guys or what impact he might have on you guys.
Right.
But I think I was a lot more oblivious to stuff like that as a kid.
Sure. I think we all are. We don't really know what we're looking at, but it's always kind of interesting to look back and see how we perceived it. I mean, I can, you know, just share about your dad. Like, I always loved talking to him even as a kid because like we said before, he just injected life into you.
Right.
Like, I don't really know sometimes what he was talking about, but I was excited to listen because he was so fucking excited to share about it.
Yeah. Yep.
And he'd just go, a million miles an hour when he was talking and just get super laughing at his own jokes. You know how your dad is. And he'd just keep going and going and going and being excited. And I just always loved listening to it.
Right.
But he was always super kind and gentle. Like, he never got upset with us.
No.
You know, he might have been like, hey guys, you know, don't do that, that sort of thing. But never really got pissed at us. I don't know.
Remember when we were taking out the blackberry bushes at the place in Seal Rock and I backed his truck up. May have had my license at that point. I think I did. But it was a stick, old truck, and busting the mirror off on like the side of the fence or something. And, you know, he got a little upset. He like made a remark or something, but it was mild and he moved on, you know, in just a few minutes. And we kind of laughed about it within like 10.
Dude, I remember him getting like kind of quote unquote annoyed, but he'd always have like this smile on his face when he was doing it.
Right.
He'd be like, don't do that next time. But oh my God, my dad and him got into some fucking adventures, didn't they? That just destroying cars and getting into all sorts of shenanigans.
Yep.
They, that famous story of my dad backing your dad up to hook up the fifth wheel. Keep coming. 5 feet. 4 feet through 2 feet. Crash. Rips a hole into the side of the truck.
It was like 20 feet, 15, yeah. 10, 3, 2, boom.
Oh, man.
That was good.
But I think that's a lot, too. They always had the ability to laugh about things.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I think that's one thing that's always rubbed off on me is I don't really get angry.
Yeah.
And I'm really good at realizing after something's happened, there's no good will come from getting angry right now. It's happened. It's done with. Like, move on. You know what I mean?
And I think we just hit on something key there. Like, I think in traditional masculinity is like you get, you know, you're not explicitly taught to be angry, but you're taught to be like firm and strong and like, yeah, you need to deal with this and
make it clear.
Don't laugh about it. It's not funny.
Right.
Like, I don't know. I always feel like that, you know, the view of traditional masculinity, it's not funny.
Yeah.
Like there's no humor or joy in it.
Right.
It's just about being strong, stoic, silent, intimidating in a way. And I never felt any of that coming from either my dad or your dad.
No.
And obviously, like you said, both of them rubbed off on me like they, you know, your dad did you. So.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And then I don't know how much of it had to do with now we mentioned earlier that they definitely tip back some beers and we're smoking pot. Oh my God.
Yep.
Dude, there was always that. We kind of knew what they were doing, right?
They grew up on the Oregon coast.
Well, they grew up on the Oregon coast, but I remember they would come up to their double wide mobile and they'd go out into that extra garage.
Right.
And shut the door behind them. And it's just like, what are you guys doing in there? You know what I mean?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Just hanging out, just talking. Right. It's like, no, they're back there smoking weed.
Did you put that together at the time or did not tell later on?
I knew what they were doing because my dad, I don't know if I've ever told you this, but my dad, I walked in on him taking the biggest bong hit I've ever seen one time.
I think so. When you guys were living in Newport?
No, this was when we were living in Walport and I was like, super small.
Oh, thinking of another moment or another instance. Yeah,
probably. No, this is when I was super small and I walked in and he just down there ripping on a bong and like he just like looks up with deer in the headlights. He's like, oh shit. And I just kind of like stopped and I'm like,
couldn't have like caught him. I'm like, at
the worst time. And I just walked in. I'm like, oops, and just walked out. But later he came up to me and he's like, he was just, super honest. And he's like, hey, this is what I do. I smoke marijuana and, you know, it's not a problem for me, but you know, if it's a problem for you, we can talk about it. And you got to understand, like, I'm less than 10 years old.
Right.
No idea what he's fucking talking about.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm like, if it's a problem for me, I'm like, if it's not a problem for you, it's not a problem for me. I remember saying that to him at that age. And it's just like, okay. So, I mean, when they're going out into the garage later after that, I knew what they were fucking
right.
doing. Right. Did you have a sense of what they were doing at all?
How old were you then? About 10? Is that what you said?
I had to have been younger than that because this was 10, fourth grade, so
probably about, what, 9?
Yeah, maybe even earlier. I was super small.
Well, you know, it's funny because I never caught my dad in the act of smoking I definitely never did. I was going to say, not that I can remember. But there was, you know, of course, there was always like, I noticed a certain smell in my dad, like, you know, throughout the years it was consistent, yeah. Not all the time, but in, you know, isolated instances, I guess. And occasionally would see like a pack of like zigzags, you know, that probably put it together for me a little later. But yeah, I wouldn't say I really knew for sure definitively until I was like 12, 13, 14, somewhere around there. As a kid, you know, I think he, you know, I don't know how often he did it, you know, when I was a kid. But I think he did a good job as far as keeping it away from everybody else.
Sure. And then once you kind of started to find out, what did you think about that?
You know, I didn't think much of it because it was almost just one of those little things that I didn't know it was going on, but I never noticed a difference in my dad.
Sure.
Like I never made a connection of, oh, sometimes he was really goofy or sometimes he's really angry, you know what I mean?
Right, you don't get angry.
He was the same person all the time, right. So I never felt concerned about it.
Yeah, that's a good point, because if you don't really know, like, then you just don't know the difference.
Right.
You don't know, oh, is he high or is he not high? You don't really see it. Did it make you, once you realized what he was doing, did it make you want to try it at all?
No. You know, and I think what it was is that once I finally did try it, I think it was after that that I went back in past memories and made the connection that that's what he was doing.
Yeah, yeah.
So at that point, once I had already done it and experienced that feeling, you know, it's like, well, I like it. I enjoy it, you know, so yeah. I can't criticize him for it, you know.
You know, and me knowing that they were doing it for a very long time now, but looking back on it now, having used it quite a bit myself, where it's like, a lot of that laughter and shit probably came when they were super stoned.
Yeah, yep.
And it definitely didn't, that aspect of it didn't put a negative connotation on cannabis for me at all.
No.
But the reason I guess I had a bit of a different relationship with it was viewing my dad's relationships with women.
Right. That's interesting.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you remember him, many of his girlfriends?
I remember... and I should know her name. Andre?
Yeah.
Andre was probably the first that I can think of right now. And then obviously
the infamous
Tomiko.
Yeah.
You know, those are... And you know, but prior to him getting married, those are the only two I can really think of right now.
Yeah.
That's, maybe if you mentioned some, I remember her too.
So before that... really the main few I can remember are one named Bambi. There was one named Barbie. And I'm not even joking. These are real fucking people. Unbelievable, this guy. Finding these people. But what I remember is yes, he would be... Sorry. yeah. He would be still smoking pot when he was with them, but a lot of them didn't like it.
Yeah.
And they were really hard on him for it.
Right.
And so he ended up developing a very torn relationship with it. And I think that's where I got my, like, I never wanted to smoke with anybody, you know, throughout
yeah,
high school.
Yeah, no, I remember you guys. Always very against it.
I was against it in the sense that I looked at my brother getting in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
I looked at what it did for my dad with his relationships.
You saw people using it as a recreational high.
Yeah.
They were doing it for fun.
But it was some of the trouble that I related the trouble that they were getting into it.
Right.
Which wasn't right. I mean, Brett didn't get into trouble because he was smoking weed.
Yeah.
I mean, one time he got caught with weed at school, but that's not why he was acting out. You know, it's my dad.
That was a result of whatever reason he was getting in trouble.
A lot of other things there, right? And my dad, he didn't have bad relationships because he smoked weed. It's just that he wasn't right with the right people who wanted to embrace it or who understood it but what it did is it created a lot of strife in him.
Right.
You know, I remember him. I was recently asked one of the things that my dad taught me, and Him being so vulnerable all the time, like saying that was, it's okay to be vulnerable because he was vulnerable with us, whether it be, hey man, I smoke weed and I hope that's okay, but if it's not, let's talk about it.
Right.
Like he was always open and vulnerable. And I remember him trying to quit smoking on numerous occasions.
Well, that's what I remember you, the Newport occasion that I brought up earlier.
Yeah.
I remember you telling me that you walked in or something and he was listening to like, Last Dance with Mary Jane.
So that was in Walport.
Oh, it was in Walport.
Yeah, that was
okay.
in Walport. And that's Newport. The moment I realized, like, I don't know. I can't quite remember whether he wanted me to be there. Or he was okay with me being there. I know it wasn't like he was trying to do it in private.
Right.
I think I was just there with him. And he literally, I just vividly remember him sitting in the middle of the living room, putting on Last Dance with Mary Jane by Tom Petty, and like crying.
Right. Interesting.
Just being super vulnerable and like broken.
See, I didn't hear that part when I heard the story the first time.
Yeah.
You just kind of gave me the cliff notes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, and that's kind of where I established my relationship with cannabis, but also also just learned, like, I was never uncomfortable with vulnerability.
Right.
Especially around other men. Just because he modeled that behavior so clearly.
Right.
I mean, maybe later that I've caught resistance from other men trying to do that, which is why I started a podcast so I could do it. But
yeah.
It was an interesting to watch him. He was so sensitive about that sort of thing, but it definitely made me shy away from it a little bit.
Right. I could see that.
So,
it's all perception, you know,
it's just how everyone figures, you know, experiences different aspects of life. I experienced weed and what I saw and related to it was different than maybe what you did.
Definitely. I mean, and you know, the reasons that, you know, I would do it today are no longer the same reasons that I would have done it when I was a teenager. You know what I mean?
So when was the first time you tried it?
I believe I was probably 16 or 17, because I remember I could not buy cigarettes at the time.
Yeah. Why?
Not peer pressure, so to speak, but I mean, I was hanging out with a bunch of buddies, mm-hmm. and, even for them, a few of them, it was their first time smoking. And in the moment I felt really comfortable with just saying, okay, and doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't even think I got high the first time. Made some type of like weird PVC pipe, with, like, multiple mouthpieces for people to hit on, you know?
Yeah.
And then it was later that night that my buddy had a party, and then, whoever we were smoking with, you know, it was, inhale, you got to inhale it, you know? And then right. I remember getting high, and it was just such a good atmosphere that I was with, like, all my good friends, you know. It was really chill. It wasn't a big party, probably 10 or 15 of us. And, I just had a great night, you know, just so many good laughs, mm-hmm. and conversation. And so you know, it was a good time. It was a
very community thing for you.
It was. Yeah. Mm.
Did you hang out? So we're kind of in high school now. We can root around in there a little bit. Did you hang out with mostly guys in high school as friends?
As far as hanging out outside of school, for sure, only guys. That was about it. And then we had the occasional girl that would kind of, you know, hang out in our group. Mm-hmm. But yeah, during school, you know, I would, you know, I'd have the few girls in certain classes that I was good friends with, and never even thought of them more as, you know, anything more than friends. Mm-hmm. But yeah, for sure, that's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
That was the only interaction I had with girls pretty much all through school. It would have been at school.
But you never, as far as the guys goes, you never felt compelled to do anything to impress them. Like, your community seemed like a pretty like-minded group.
Yeah. I mean, only maybe the competitive aspect of me, mm-hmm. that I want to do better than he did. Sure. You know what I mean? So, and that's not me trying to impress them. That's my own thing of
sure.
my competitiveness. So
do you feel like, do you like that aspect of you, that competitive side?
I do, you know, and only certain people bring that out in me. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, my buddy Joey, I mean, we're both that same personality, mm-hmm. that we enjoy it. We push each other. Mm-hmm. We drive each other with it. So
I'm wondering, that's,
and we're shit talkers, you know, but it's funny. He's the only other dude that I'll be really, really like that with. You know?
Well, I mean, I know guys, especially, you know, growing up, we like to talk shit to each other just for the sake of talking shit.
Yeah. And, you know, I might sarcastically do it to you.
Yeah. I mean,
and that's how it is with him too.
We always got a smile on your face, and so do I.
Yeah.
Like, we always know we're joking, or it's just a little different. But I'm wondering, because that's something that can go, that competitive nature can really go in a bad place.
Yeah. One time, I mean, I remember getting in a fight, you know, with Joey, say, twice in my entire life. And one was a few years ago, and it was so minor, but it was, you know, us playing a game online and talking shit afterwards. And then one of us got defensive, you know.
Sure.
And then it was like within a day, we're like, yeah, my bad, dude. That was stupid.
Yeah.
Shouldn't have said that. So, you know, I think that was a good experience for us. We don't let it go that far anymore. Mm-hmm. But you're right. Competitiveness can even drive a wedge, you know.
It can definitely drive a wedge. And
you got to have some control over it.
You definitely have to have control of it, because I think when you get super into that feeling of beating people.
Yeah, if you get ruthless.
You get ruthless. And maybe this is especially for men that we like that status of being on top.
Right.
And some people take that too far.
Yeah, I agree.
because some people take it too far. That's, you know, not good.
Yep. At what point is it worth being the best or winning something? You know, you sacrifice.
Do you think men are more attracted to power, and not only not just having it, but just in other people?
I do. I think so. Not that I can think of any specific circumstances in my life or people I know directly, but my overall thought of man, you know, yeah. I do. I mean, not to get into politics or anything,
you can get into
but
whatever
I think,
you want.
You know, I mean, yeah, I think so many of those people are driven by power.
Yeah. And not just,
not the greater good. You know what I mean? They're looking out for number one. So.
And it's what's always really disturbed me about some of that is it's like, it's power just for the sake of having power.
Right.
Which is so frightening to me because, like, it's not that, oh, we want power so we can get money. We want power so we can get whatever. It's just we want power.
Right. And some people,
there's no
it is
end.
About the money.
Right. But
or
I mean,
with power comes money. I don't know.
Right.
You know, in but, certain circumstances. But
with some of it, if it's just power for the sake of having power.
Right.
Like, you will go to no ends to get it.
Right.
And you'll, and there is no end. There's no cap on it. You'll always want more.
Right.
Which is frightening.
You associate power with control as well. Like,
yeah, for sure.
It's interesting.
For sure.
I would agree.
I mean, in my view, a lot of men like control.
Control is definitely a type of power.
Yeah. Control over another person.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Or just even, not even in just another person, but over a situation. You yeah. know what I mean? Some people have to have that.
And what, how do you think, that didn't develop in you?
No.
Clearly, like, that. I don't think that developed in either one of us. And I'm wondering what stopped that from developing.
Well, it's interesting, and I don't think a lot of people know this, but I am definitely a perfectionist when it comes to certain things. Mm-hmm. To where sometimes it'll consume me, you know, like that.
Yeah.
As a kid, when I'd go out and play basketball, and this was middle school, high school, you know, like at the end of my little session, I would have to make 20 free throws straight.
Yeah.
And I would not go inside until I did it. And sometimes it would take me hundreds of shots, 2 or 3 hours. And I would be on the verge of passing out, dizzy, like craving sugar. My blood, you know,
yeah.
My blood sugar just dropped super low. And so those things would consume me sometimes, my like need to do something like that to just like, I don't know. And you know, that I don't have any things like that anymore today, but there are certain little things that I'm definitely a perfectionist. And
right.
Sometimes it'll consume me.
Consuming, yeah, that's.
But not often, and I don't feel the need to have a control over certain situations, and, you know, I don't lose it if I don't.
Right. Maybe that's some of the scary part as far as the being consumed by it. You know, if there's a, not that, I'm not saying that you have scary, you know, you scare me with your tendencies.
Right.
For that,
yeah.
But there's
yeah.
definitely.
Most people don't even know about that. I mean, that's my own, like,
right, but you
perspective
can,
of myself on certain things.
That's the part of it where it goes off the rails, is where you're just consumed by your
right.
need for control and
yeah,
power.
Yep.
But I guess for me, I just was never. My dad was always so egoless. Well, I mean, he had an ego. Everyone has a bit of an ego, but. He was just never, power never seemed interesting to him.
Right.
So I don't know. I just never developed the need to control. I mean, obviously I guess I've tried to find control in other areas of my life other than being, quote unquote, this powerful man.
Right.
You know, whether it be with my running or my food choices or my life as far as like where I live. And
yeah. And those are the things you can be in control of.
Right.
Know,
and so I probably have, you know, had that sense of control in other places in my life, but I've never felt the need or want to control another human.
Yeah.
Or
yeah,
have
no,
this,
me neither.
Have power over another person.
That's so real to me when it comes to somebody else. Like, it's like, I'm very aware of who am I to try to impact this other human being's, like,
right.
you know, thoughts or emotions. Like, mm-hmm.
How early do you think that sort of thing developed, or that awareness? When did you first kind of notice, like, I have this awareness that I don't want to impact somebody else. I don't want to control somebody else.
I think almost always, and then maybe that roots somewhat from my shyness, you know? Mm-hmm. I think sometimes, or maybe my shyness stems from that I'm going to be, or not shy, but, like, I'm going to be overly kind and polite because I don't want this person to feel threatened or, you know, like I'm trying to persuade them, you know, in a certain direction. I don't know. So I don't know. I think I've always been aware of that from a pretty young age that, you know, I don't want to.
Never really felt good.
Yeah. No.
Hmm. Yeah. Cause that's clearly not.
And it's different norm. You know, and I think it's different if I think something that, you know, that I fully believe in, I'm going to voice my expression or my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm trying to, like, you know, I'm just trying to share a perspective basically with other people. So not that I'm trying to control them, but if I feel the urge to, I will say what I think, you know, and if that does change their opinion or, you know, then it does.
But that's just more like sharing an opinion about something. Which,
exactly. Yeah.
Which I think it's fine. It just maybe becomes problematic when you're like, no, you're going to see it my way or there will be consequences for that.
So I'm probably so naive when it comes to like that question with control that it's hard for me to even comprehend.
Yeah. You know? It's hard for me to even comprehend. I don't understand how, you know, you look at what these men are doing to some of these women. Like I literally cannot put my brain into understanding why they would do that.
And I've dated people who are very controlling too on everything, and it drives them crazy. Yes, like don't twirl that thing in your hands. It's like it's such insignificant things.
Yeah.
But then that in turn bugs me. Sure. It's like, you know.
And so your dating didn't start until when? Was it high school? Is when you kind of
high
first
school?
Started
that would have been my first like serious. Yeah, yeah, probably obviously. Senior year would have been my first long-term, you know, relationship.
And what was your kind of view on women at that point? Girls, really. I mean, high school girls, right? They're not.
I was so consumed, or not consumed. I was so focused on just enjoying life and being happy and getting my schoolwork done and hanging out with my buddies. That it's funny, I didn't have much interest in girls. Obviously, I found certain women attractive, you know, and stuff like that in school. But, I didn't have that desire of, oh, I want to date them. You know, it just wasn't even a thought in my mind. But, you know, when I met the right person, it, you know, it clicked and, you know, and the rest is history after that. So it's like, I don't know. I never made that like my mission that I'm going to find a girl. And I was never the type that I was like, I'm going to go out to parties and hook up. And, well, that, you know what I mean? I was just never that guy.
So you're never you weren't hookup guy, but you also weren't like seek relationship guy right away.
No. Yeah. That was not my interest.
Until later.
Yeah.
Like senior year, you said.
Yeah. And even senior year, it's like, you know, when I met Danielle, it was really, we just clicked. Like, you know, she was, just instantly became one of my best friends, you know. Male or female, didn't matter. So then it kind of evolved into, bless you.
Yep.
It just evolved into just a great relationship. But, you know, it's not like I thought she was beautiful. I wanted to go talk to that girl and I was nervous. You know, we were hanging out with the same group and it just clicked one night. And, you know, it just all went forward from there. And it's great.
Had you tried to connect with other girls?
No, not really. That was never like my intention or my mission.
So you never really did, I guess the question, did you, how much rejection or did you experience?
Zero.
Yeah.
Cause I never sought after it, you know? There was never any girl I met that just like infatuated me to the degree that I got to talk to that girl. I got to ask her out. I have to, you know, just never really happened like in high school, middle school.
Yeah.
I was happy and content with, you know, hanging out with my buddies and doing what we were doing.
Did you ever feel like, well, that girl's probably attracted to me. Did you ever
I had a few.
Thing, but
yep.
You just kind of were like, eh, whatever. Just kind of ignored it.
That's weird. I mean, I even remember parties where I sensed that.
Yeah.
You know, and that's funny. I had a girl walk into a party one time and I kind of knew her from like, you know, other mutual friends and stuff. And she walked in and called dibs on me. So it was like a really weird situation. And she was really pretty. And I thought her friend was just absolutely beautiful. But
how odd.
Yeah, it was really weird. You know, and I remember finding it funny. And I was hanging out with my friend. So, you know, I was very confident in like my personality and myself, like at that time. And
what did that, wait a minute. What did that make you feel like when she said that? Like,
good. You know, I smiled. She looked right at me and I like smiled and like, you know, I was already like having a conversation with my friend. So I acknowledged it directly to her.
Were you like, goddamn right, dibs?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's right.
Yeah. It was definitely like a little bit of a confidence boost even, you know, so obviously it felt good. And then, you know, I hung out with her most of the rest of the night and then, never saw her again, you know, like,
yeah.
I know she went to another school and stuff. I mean, yeah, so it's funny. It's like little instances like that, but
yeah, but not.
I still wasn't motivated to
pursue
it. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Going. So we didn't. Just to kind of put this in a little bit of perspective, I came down to live with you guys. I think it was my freshman year.
Yeah, yeah, it would have been freshman year. I'm pretty sure.
Freshman year. I started going to school down there.
My sophomore year. Your freshman year.
Yep. Started going down to school down there in Tucson, but got a little overwhelmed and grandpa got sick and it was just, I think I just missed home and it was just a weird age, right?
Well, I think my high school had almost as many people as your
town.
Old hometown. So yeah, that 2000? That's a big, yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, I think it was close to 2,300.
Yeah. So your high school might've been bigger than the town I grew up in.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was some of it. And just some of it was as I felt.
Our school should have had 2,000 kids, but it was way over.
Right.
And that's how the other two schools that were identical layouts and floor plans and stuff too. They were all over capacity.
And I felt loved in the house. I felt comfortable, but I guess I don't know why it didn't work.
It was a weird time for me too, though. Like I was going through some changes. That was like, you know, I would have been what, like 16?
Yeah.
15, 16. So It was different for me to try to balance, you know, hanging out with you and not knowing if you would like my friends.
Sure.
And then I didn't want you to ever feel obligated to have to come out with me if you didn't like my friends. You know what I mean? But
Definitely.
So
didn't.
I tried to like walk on eggshells and like with all
tricky
you guys.
Balance.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I'm that type too, though, where I'll try to put people around me at ease. You know, even if you weren't putting off anything that I should have been picking up, I think I'm just that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, we can kind of come back to that. It's interesting. But so I'll just kind of say, once kind of high school hit for us, I don't remember hanging out as much.
Yeah.
Like, did you guys come up to you guys weren't up as often, were you, by that time?
Well, we were. I mean, we still went, let's see here, all the way through my junior year.
Yeah.
And then I remember senior year, Danielle went up with me. We went up for like the summer.
That's right.
My parents
were
already up. We took a road trip on later, you know.
Yep.
For about a month or so, I think we went up there. But it was odd. So did you go to Hawaii after or before you came to Tucson to go to high school?
I want to say it was after.
That's what I was thinking. So it seems like the next summer after that, after you went down to Tucson, went to Saguaro or high school and... Yeah. The next summer that we went up to Oregon after that, it was almost like, I don't think you were there.
Might not have been there. And I guess all this is to say, just we weren't around each other as much.
No.
And this is why, like, I ask you, like, this is really the first time I ever heard about, you know, your view on girls in high school.
Right.
We just weren't around each other as much.
Yeah. Yeah. We wouldn't have talked about that stuff.
We wouldn't
as much
have talked
then.
About it. I guess we never really had developed that sort of relationship.
Right.
At that point. Like we do now, maybe, but I mean, looking back at my high school experience was much the same. I was, you know, super shy and a little bit afraid of women. I mean, I told you this earlier where I was always afraid to connect with a woman because it was like, is that my mom?
Right.
Which was like, you know, if I'd start having feelings for somebody and I'd see a little glimpse of like, ooh, my mom does that. Like,
right.
I would just like disengage.
Totally put you off, yeah.
Totally put me off. And I know I'm not saying this to brag, but I know like two maybe that were super interested.
Right.
And I just is never, I don't know. I'm just like, yeah, that's not, I don't, I'm kind of scared of that. So,
right.
Much of the same way that, you know, just, yeah, I know they were pretty and it was interesting, but my experiences from the past were kind of tainted my desire to seek a relationship at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that. That's interesting.
Which, I mean, fuck, high school fucking kids.
Is what it is. Like, yeah. Yep.
I mean,
but you're aware of that now.
High school sweethearts are, some get married, but at the end of the day, you're like, those are pretty.
The success rates of those. Yeah. It's pretty low. It's kinda, pretty rare to see somebody who married their high school sweetheart who's still together.
And I've never been hookup guy. So, it's just been, it was kind of an interesting experience, but the one thing I really haven't talked about much with anybody is just, I've got my mom kind of in and out of my life, in doing so in chaos, right? Like, she was just she had what I think was some issues with alcohol and maybe some other things, but she was just chaos. Never consistently in or out, unfortunately.
Right.
So I just had my dad, but then I had my dad raising me. So I had that thing from her, but then I also had my dad teaching me about women. And he always taught me to have the utmost respect for women.
Right.
Almost like he taught me to revere women.
Yeah. That's, yeah.
And
that's
almost
good.
To
that's
the, yeah, it is. I mean, he saw women as like these powerful spiritual beings, like they are.
And they are. Yeah. And when we're nothing without that, you know?
Yeah. Like, yeah. But almost to the point where it affected me in a way that was like, made me a little afraid of them.
Yeah.
So I had a little bit of the fear from my mom. And then I also had like this almost over reverence from my dad. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yep.
It's a really hard thing to explain. And I'm not saying that you should only have like 80% reverence for somebody, but it was just at that time, it was just, it made me super nervous around women.
Right. You see, and I got that from like just pop culture, like movies and stuff as a kid. That's just like, that's always what they would portray a young boy talking to the young girl. And it's,
yeah.
He's always nervous. You know what I mean? Like, so it's funny. I think that definitely impacted me. I was always nervous. I still am.
me too. But it's interesting how that affected us from pop culture, like seeing the little boys nervous, yet that clearly didn't affect.
No, for sure.
Other guys.
Yeah, because I have a few friends that always blew my mind with how many, like, if anything, they had more, you know, friends that were girls, not like on a romantic relationship, but I mean, just friends that were girls and they did guys, you know?
Yeah.
And it always just, it's like, man, that's what happened so that they're that way. You know what I mean? Like something in their childhood that they felt more comfortable.
Yeah. I don't know. My dad always seemed like a confident guy. But he was always super sensitive at the same time, but I guess too, a little bit, like I would see his relationships and, a lot of early on before he met Kelly, they didn't really treat him that well either.
Yeah, you've got to have mutual respect.
He gave of himself so much, and yet they would just kind of be shitty to him.
Your dad's that type that he'll just give giving. And give. Yeah.
And so I think I saw that a little bit, and it was just kind of like my formed a little bit of fear in me.
Yeah, I could see that.
Which has taken me a long time. Now I've shooken it. Shaken. It's gone, but it definitely took me a while.
Right.
Definitely took me a while. So throughout high school, so the first long-term relationship with Danielle, pretty much senior year.
Yeah. Yep. And that was 6 or 7 years. So that was quite a while.
Yeah.
In comparison to most, you know, what I had to compare at that time, most of my friends and stuff. And
right. And by this time in high school, had you started kind of forming your vision for what a man, like a real man was or a strong man was or anything like that? Like masculinity, did you start forming a kind of like a guy, like I want to become this to be a man. This is what I see a man as.
It's interesting. You know, I can't say that I did. Like, I think for whatever reason, I was just super okay with who I was, and
yeah,
and or just oblivious of that, you know, comparing myself, you know, I had my ideas always of what, you know, your typical man's man is, and
what were those?
Masculinity. And,
what were those at the time?
Just your typical, I don't know, the obvious drinking beer, talking sports, like, yeah, you know, no crying, like, you yeah know, I don't know, suck it up, just that type of thing. You know, those were, to name it, just a few, but, mm-hmm, but I never analyzed myself, you know.
You never embraced those.
Yeah, or compared that. Like, right. Yeah, so I don't know. It was really, I knew what my idea and definition of like masculinity was.
So you didn't see those things. You didn't see those things in yourself.
No, I didn't compare it. And I did not see them in myself. I just didn't even go over that. You know, I mean, I just didn't even, I can't think of the word. I didn't analyze that aspect of myself. I just didn't compare. I didn't compare mm-hmm myself to what I thought it should be, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know why that is. I don't know if it's because I just felt I was that way.
Did you ever have moments though where you were like, ooh, that wasn't very manly of me, or that wasn't very, or I should try to do this to be more manly?
Yeah. Let me think here. It's funny, like for me, a large part of, you know, it's sometimes it's the way I talk to people. If I'm talking to a guy, you know, I'll have like a little deeper voice.
Yeah.
So I would notice times where it's funny. I always wanted to be approachable. I always wanted to like come off as like very easy to be around. Like when it comes to first introductions to certain people, and I don't know, I kind of get a read a vibe, you know, if they're the shy type, then I'm going to be like, you know, hi, how are you doing? You know,
yeah.
Unlike, you know, if they're a little more direct, it's like, what's up? I'm Tommy. You know, it's like,
sure.
So there were times where maybe I would notice something like that, like, oh, I said that very softly, and like, you know.
Dude, last night I was having a chat with a lady, and I noticed my voice a little softer.
Yeah, yeah.
A little more gentler.
It's
like,
funny.
Just a little more gentle. And the thing is once I did it and heard myself, I instantly remember making fun of my dad for doing that all the fucking time.
Right.
And
in that moment,
I'm like.
But it hit you in that moment. Like,
fuck. I'd made fun of him for so long.
Now
for
you kind of get it. Yeah.
And now at 30, I'm doing it. And I'm just like, okay, I get it. I get it. But I made fun of him for so long for doing that.
Right, right. But and it's funny, he probably did it for the same reasons that I do, that you just want to like put somebody at ease and just.
I guess. I like, is that it? Like, I don't,
That's how I am, you know, so.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying you're wrong at all.
Right.
I was actually asking why did you do it? Or did you do that with Danielle?
You know, early on, I think that's my reaction when it comes to meeting somebody or getting introduced to somebody. But it didn't, you know, once I was comfortable with her, I didn't feel that need. And there were times where maybe I could tell she felt more vulnerable, and I would be that way. I'd be like, you know, it's all right. Like, you know, soft spoken, you know, say what I think is going to make her feel better. You know,
sure.
I don't know. So it didn't know. It was more of an initial thing. Once I started hanging out with Danielle, probably like the first couple of weeks, and then I probably went away.
Well, now looking back on comparing my experience and kind of observing my dad when he would do it too, he was also, it was also just how he expressed this unexpressible joy.
Right.
From talking to this other person.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was just super happy, and it came across as like very soft and very, hey, how are you?
Yeah.
Hey,
yep.
hey.
I think you can really tell when it's mutual too.
Yeah.
When the other person on the other end of the conversation feels the exact same way.
Right.
And it's like, that was really great to meet you. It was a great conversation. You know, I don't know. And there's times where you're just like, just get this over with.
yeah.
Not really.
The conversations definitely light you up with some people.
Yeah, yeah.
But they make, it's funny how you do change your voice. And some of it, maybe it's like, I want to make sure that this other person knows that they can be comfortable around me. And
right.
I don't know if I've ever, I don't know, maybe somebody can tell me out there that's listening to this, if I've done that with guys where I go deeper, go a little deeper. Hey, man.
Or if you're going to speak to and you know, if a little old lady asks you directions or, you know, I can't find my way, are you going to be like, so, dude, you got to go down the block.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? You'd be like, yeah, you just got to, you know, walk down that way, you know, take a right at the next street. You know, it's funny. People will do that. I mean, they'll.
Oh, I definitely have an issue with having a resting bitch face, though. Like, sometimes my face or my tone isn't good when it's not my intention.
Right.
I get caught up in that a little bit. But for the most part, like, yeah, if a little old lady approached me for directions, I wouldn't be annoyed. I'd just be like, oh, yeah, I'm happy to help.
Yeah, yeah.
Happy to help. You know.
It's funny. I'm always aware of how older people may view us. You know, damn hooligan. Damn, like, you know, so it's funny. Kids. It's like I always make it a point to try to show that I'm not right away.
Yeah.
You know, that I'm very thoughtful and respectful, and you know,
that can
I don't
be
know hard. Why people want to prove that to like the older generations, but
that can be hard for me with a bunch of tattoos and
right
long ass hair and just like, but once people get to talking to me, it's usually okay. But but it's interesting how you were saying in high school, though, there was little subtleties that you would do with the voice and that sort of thing,
body language too. Mm-hmm. Reading that, you know,
because I mean, for me, like I always felt I didn't feel the real need to try to be the traditional man. I saw a lot of toxic masculinity.
Right.
Whether
I agree.
I saw a lot of it from the places that I lived, because I didn't live with my dad in high school. I was with my aunt and uncle.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And I remember that.
My uncle, I would say, was exhibiting some toxic masculinity.
Right.
And so that never appeased me at all. But I did sometimes, since I was always kind of a sensitive guy and stuff, I did kind of look at some of those elements of traditional masculinity and be like, would that get me anywhere?
Right.
Should I be doing that over there? But so there was always kind of that struggle too, where it's like, I didn't want to do it, but the thought that it might get me something.
Exactly.
I wrestled with that quite a bit. Even in high school.
I did too. After high school for years. I mean, I was definitely very analytical over every little thing.
Yeah.
I mean, relationship wise, communication wise, appearance, you know, like.
Yeah, the appearance thing.
How am I perceived? How is this perceived? How is the way I speak perceived? You know, like, so I became too focused on that, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, it can. And you start to think like, how other people are perceiving you, are they not perceiving me as man enough?
Right. Yeah. Yep.
But the struggle is too, this internal struggle with us is like, we don't really fucking care. Mm-hmm. We care, but then internally we don't want to care.
We know it really doesn't matter.
Right. We know it really doesn't matter and we just want to do our own thing.
Yeah.
But for some reason to some people, this matters.
Right.
And that's the heart. I think that's kind of part of the real struggle there is that we just want to be free to be ourselves.
Right.
We want to give people a hug. We want to, you know, show emotion. We want to do all these things. But then we see this other form of being a man, this masculinity, traditional masculinity being rewarded.
Yeah.
Which was kind of frustrating. Frustrating to see it being rewarded.
Right. Yep. It's such a different day and age and time. And
now, yeah.
Yeah. Even compared to 30, 40 years ago. It's insane.
Yeah. So, and that's just all through high school right there.
Right.
I mean, yeah. I mean, obviously our views as adults and even nowadays with everything that's been going on here, that's changed a little bit. But just through high school, I think a lot of that was formed. I don't know.
I find it fascinating where I think, us as a people are going, you know, in a short period too. I mean, just from women not being able to vote, you know, and that was just not that long ago, you know, and those things, oh, women stay home. They don't have day jobs, you know, and all of that. So, you know, just as far as that's come, I think people as a whole, when it comes to what we think is right and wrong and masculine and feminine. You know what I mean? I think we're not that far off where we're going to have a much better balance, I would hope. I mean, you know, in the next 50 years from now.
I fucking hope so, man.
I mean, yeah. I mean, we're definitely on that path, but I think it's for the better.
And let's... So we're going to split this up into two... We're definitely going to do this into two episodes because I wanted to touch all about our childhood together, our parents, and kind of how we viewed each other up to high school. Because I think for both of us, post-high school, some shit's gone down now too.
Right.
That's changed our views quite a bit.
Definitely.
Yep. And I want to, so I want to put
started to shape us, you know.
Yeah. So I want to put a pin in it at what you just said, because I want to come back to that.
Yeah.
I want to come back to women's role in society and where we are now and where we might be going. But I also, to kind of tease the next episode, want to hear a little bit about the lost years. That's kind of how I see them, because I think, you know, you struggled with some addiction issues.
Yeah. Yep.
And at that point, I pretty much lost complete touch with you.
Yeah. Yeah. We weren't in really any contact.
Any contact. Now, spiritually, soul-wise, there was, I don't think there's anything that could destroy that. Because after that, we just came right back like we did. We didn't skip a beat.
Yeah. Yep. And we had a whole new dynamic on top of that.
Yeah, we did.
Like much better.
We did. But I want to hear about kind of that experience and kind of what that did for you as a man, as far as like why you started and stuff like that. So we'll talk about post high school and as adults in the next episode. I think that's a good way to split it up.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds good.
But I have, so each episode with each guy, we do this,
right.
We do this little, section, this little kind of segment called What Women Wonder. And so what I've done is I've gotten the community of women listeners to send me a bunch of questions that they want to hear two guys talk about. So for each guest, I've done two questions.
Nice.
So all right. I've got your two questions right here. And these are just random from the community. So first one, and I think we can speak to this one pretty well, but, it's how do you respond to the tears of a family member or friend, or how do you express your own grief? So I think they're referring to like tears from grief and that sort of thing. How
right.
do you respond when...
My first response is to go straight over and give him a hug.
Yeah.
That's my immediate, like, that's what I've always done. That's what my mom, you know, I think has taught me. She's mm-hmm. always been the same way. You know, and just put my arms around him and just give him a hug. I don't have to say anything. I don't have to try to make him feel any better. You know, I'm aware that if it's coming, if it's grief, there's nothing I can say that is going to make them feel better. You know what I mean?
Where did you learn that?
I don't think there was one instance that taught me that. I think it was like just a number of experiences, you know, where I had to slowly pick up on that.
Yeah.
You know, Danielle was one as well. She was the one that I was mentioning when we get into an argument. And I always wanted to be the one to like, I hated like having any type of friction, that I wanted to fix it right then. And she needed space. So I think that was, that touched on that same subject a little bit, that I realized that there's nothing I can say in this moment, you know, that's going to make you feel better. Even if it was something I did, like, you know, not a grief type.
Yeah.
You know,
Do you remember, so after my dad died, do you remember the first contact we had? I don't.
No. That's interesting, because I'll think about that more now that you brought that up. But right now, I cannot think of the first contact we had, like, after. I remember the first time I saw you after, because we met for your dad's memorial in Yahats. I'm pretty
right.
sure.
Right.
Unless you came up.
I can't remember. I don't remember.
I didn't get to see your dad before he passed, because my parents went down and I stayed to run the shop.
Right.
So.
And the reason I ask, because every time I see you, I always get a fucking hug.
Yeah.
And I always feel, and I always feel so much better. And I don't know a lot of guys like that.
You know what? I have a good thing. And when you're talking about the masculine and feminine, one thing that I always did as a kid, which was totally different than most kids, and my friends would give me crap, but I just did not care. I'd give them crap back. But I would always give my mom or my dad a hug and a kiss when they dropped me off at school in front of all my friends.
And your dad.
And my dad. Yeah.
And your dad.
Yep.
Key point there.
And they would be like, dude, you kiss your mom or your dad? I'm like, can they drop you off? I'm like, you don't. Like, you know, always, it's funny. And I never bugged me at all.
I've always been a bit, not envious, but just really admired your closeness with both of your parents like that.
Dude, if I leave the shop today, I will give my dad a hug and a kiss on the cheek.
I love that.
Say bye. I don't care if customers are in the room and they'll usually be like, oh, you know.
Yeah.
But I will never regret it. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
And it's not like I'm going through the motion either. That it's just like, you know, I don't know. That's always been a...
And I think for me too, what you're describing insofar as like the first thing I can do is give people a hug and just like having lost my dad, I think I've had the worst thing happen to me ever.
Yeah.
Like before that, if I envisioned what is the worst thing that could happen to you, that would have been my answer.
That would be my answer right now.
So I literally walked through my own personal hell. Like I feel like I've been to hell and back. And there is not one goddamn thing anyone ever said to me that made me feel better.
Right.
But if somebody like you just walked into the room and gave me a hug and just if you would have walked in the room, gave me a hug and said, want to go get a sandwich, I would have been that would have made me feel so much better.
Right.
And I don't. So, I mean, I guess I responded the same way now where it's like, I want to give somebody a hug and just make it known that I'm just here.
Right. Yep. That's, you know, I think that's that's all you can do sometimes in those moments. And
but you've developed that, it sounds like, through practice and you're kind of being open to it. And the same thing for me. My dad would always hug, give me a kiss. Love you, Brad. Love you, Spanky. You know?
Yeah.
All that sort of thing. And then I guess I'll kind of lump this into the first question, but how do you express your grief?
Not verbally.
Right.
You know, I'm just not that type. I'm not that type to, what do you mean by grief as far as, are you specifically talking like maybe a death in the family or,
sure.
I mean, in just in general, I'm not the type that, you know, not that it's ever really happened, but if somebody like were to say something to me at work that was like really upsetting or mean or hurtful,
mm-hmm.
I'm not the type to go home and like call my girlfriend and like tell them all about it or like come home and like tell, you know, anybody about it really. I mean, it's weird and I don't feel like it's unhealthy, but I also feel like in a sense it happened. And you know, I shouldn't say that there are times that, I will come and just be like, you know, you won't believe what happened today, you know, this lady. But for the most part, it's like, I like to analyze it myself, mm-hmm. you know, and it takes some time and I come to peace with it on my own terms, like, you know, on whatever situation that might've been. Like if I feel the need to talk to somebody, I will, but it's not my first response.
Hmm. That's interesting. I think that seems to be common for guys.
Yeah.
That we like to internalize things a little bit.
Seeing in my own mind, I feel like I'm the only one.
Yeah,
you know, it's
funny,
even though I know.
Right.
But
right.
I don't think like, unlike most guys that maybe feel like it's not masculine to talk about something that upset them with other people. That's not the reason that I don't
see
do
that.
It.
And that's the difference, I think, between your intention and other guys'
right.
intention is just you have a process for doing it and you know what works.
Yeah.
And it's not that you're afraid to speak. You're clearly not.
Yeah.
You're sitting here talking to me for 2 hours about kind of, you know, vulnerable stuff and about growing up and masculinity, but it's just that you know your process.
Yeah. And it's funny because sometimes being on the other end of that conversation where, you know, a past relationship or a girlfriend would call me, you know, it's like, I had the worst day. Like this girl said this to me and sometimes I just never got from that other side, like, you know, oh, how did this upset you this much? It was so minor. You know, how could you come home and call me and just really dwell on this? Like, it just didn't seem healthy to me. Even though everybody has their own process, I'm sure, you know, for some people that is their way of, like, getting past something. But for me, it's like, you just bring it up and it's like, you're bringing that negativity back again,
right.
Like right now into the moment, you know? And it's like, you had to have calmed down somewhat, like from the hours ago that that happened, you know, and now you're bringing it up again. And so, you know, but I do understand people do have that process of.
So if, so let's say you're experiencing some grief and you have, you already know your system is very internal and you know, it's, you feel like it's a healthy one, but let's say I approached you and wanted to talk to you about it. How would you respond to that? Because I'm kind of challenging your system a little
bit. Right, right. Well, I would be totally open to it. I'm always to, you mean,
maybe
me
let's
listening
take,
and you talk about
maybe
it?
Maybe let's take me out of the equation because we're kind of close.
Right.
Maybe it's somebody who's, you're not as close with who.
And I'm the one having to talk?
Yeah, you're the one grieving.
And I'm put into the situation and have to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if somebody could just be a,
well, I mean, you don't have to, but like, you know,
I would though. Like, you know, if somebody said, you know, if my parents came home or something happened and they're like, we want you to go see a counselor. We want you to go talk to somebody.
Yeah.
I'd say, okay. You know, like I'd be open to it.
You're flexible. Yeah, yeah. And that's the key. Like, grief, I don't know, you know, as a man, I don't really feel like grief, I treat it differently because I'm a man. Maybe that was because of the way I was raised, but clearly we were both raised by very open parents. But I think when I was, how I expressed grief, going through what I did with my dad was unlike anything I can describe. So I was grieving pretty much from the moment the doctor told us that he had 2 years to live.
Right. Yeah. That's.
And I've always liked to talk about things and been very open and like to share about how I'm feeling. And one of the best things, though, that I did to make me feel better, just to grieve, and it didn't solve anything, but it just made me feel better, was just to fucking cry.
Yeah. It does.
Just a fucking deep.
Did you realize that, like, after having that experience of like something happening, you just breaking down, you know, into tears, and then realizing after that that felt good?
Excuse me, battling a bit of a cold, but yeah, so I think you get so into, you know, or at least for me, I got so into my own head about things and was such just filled with fear and just confusion about life that it just overwhelms you and you can't hold it in.
Right.
And yep. Part of the cleansing, part of the letting go and just crying just makes you feel human and makes you let you feel those emotions.
Makes everything real.
Makes everything real and kind of, it feels really good.
It does.
Yep. I mean, it's, no, I mean, my dad dying of brain cancer didn't feel good.
No, I know what you mean. Yeah.
But the release of this intense feelings that I was having coming out in tears and just emotion was, felt good.
Right. Even if it's a song or a movie or an ending, you know what I mean?
Now I'll cry at certain music will come on.
Right. Yeah. Same.
Like Jeff Buckley song will come on that was shared. Like my dad showed me and we both loved it. And I'll just start crying. I'll just start crying. And it's not like deep grief and sadness, but it's just like this intense emotion of memory that comes up in me.
Gotcha.
And it's almost like now it's shifted a little bit. The grief has shifted to joy.
Right.
In that, like, now it's like tears of joy.
Yeah. It's kind of reminisce.
Right. Right. But I don't know. I think the main thing I learned about grief, too, and I think it's genderless, is that everyone does it differently.
Definitely. Yep.
And there really is no one right way to do it.
I'm just thinking that in my head as you said it.
There just isn't.
No. Everybody grieves differently.
I mean, as long as you're grieving.
Yeah.
I think some people just don't grieve, which, I mean, I'm not a doctor, but I don't feel like that's.
And for all we know, they are, and that's just another form of grieving. You know what I mean?
So well, it's really. There you go.
It can go deep into that, I'm sure.
It's just that those, you know, sometimes those walls that you can put up around your heart can be made of iron.
That's the key, though, is even if you don't visually see it, are you grieving or are you suppressing it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So there's times where we may never, you know, witness somebody showing grief.
Sure.
And maybe they are internally.
I think it just becomes a problem
from it. But
I think the problem becomes when we put up walls around our heart.
Yeah.
I think men are more prone to do that.
Yeah, I agree.
Whether or not we don't handle grief as well, I don't know. I don't know.
Sometimes just those strong personalities are that way too, male, female.
Maybe some men just find that they've been taught that, you know, strength is just staying stoic. Yeah, your dad died.
Yeah, that it's weakness to show emotion. It's weakness, you know, to show
that emotion. And I don't know, I've just never taught that. So
I think there's like that like evolution though that I don't know. I feel like I'm proud, you know, of who I am, and you know, I feel like my having the type of, I don't know, introspective mind that I do,
yeah,
you know, that I feel like I you know, there's only a handful of, maybe not even a handful, dude, two friends, you and another, that I think are even capable of that, like,
sure,
or that practice it, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And not intentionally, but it's just naturally who we are. It's just the way our minds work. And I feel like that's some people aren't capable of that. And I kind of,
do you think it
feel
can be,
sorry for them a little bit.
Do you think
bit.
It can be taught? I have no idea.
Oh, that's a good question.
Cause I mean, a lot of the things that we're describing was we were born into families who already kind of had these skills of, you know, grief, of being open, of being, you know,
I think everything. It can be taught, because I wasn't this way until I moved up here, and it was almost like I came to a fork in the road, you know what I mean? And it was like
some
the
of
path
it was,
I took
some
led
of
me to
it
that.
Was nature though some
yeah.
of it was from the experiences that you had outside of being taught,
definitely.
So it's kind of, I guess it always is nature versus nurture. You kind of need both, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Interesting. Grief.
But it was something, you know, when I took that path down that road, that it led to me being more thoughtful and conscious of mm-hmm. myself. And, you know,
you had no fear to go down that road, though.
No.
I think some guys have fear that they're going to lose part of their manhood if they go down that road.
I got really into that, you know, meditation and, mm-hmm. you know, mind over matter. And
mm-hmm.
and I what the human brain is capable of, and so much that we don't even know.
Oh, my God.
I mean,
powerful.
It is. Yeah, it's so powerful. I mean, it's our subconscious, it's our mind. It is like
yeah.
So I am a firm believer that you can really impact yourself and your body and your perception and your happiness all with just your mind, you know.
So
you've got to have those.
I just listened to this other podcast, it's called Invisibilia, and there's this that episode about the blind guy I told you that mm-hmm. he sees by clicking.
Right. Yeah, well, I had seen another show with that same
right.
guy.
Well, part of that episode, they were talking a little bit about, and I'm going to butcher this, so you can go listen to that episode if you want to really figure it out. But they said that even the expectations you place on other people can affect their outcomes, like their performance.
Right.
Which is mind-boggling.
That's pressure when you know somebody has an expectation.
Right. And if you say, I expect this person to perform at a higher level beyond what they think they can, they will perform at a higher level.
Right.
But if you expect them to perform poorly, they're going to perform less than what they would
they're
have.
Going to underperform.
They're going to underperform.
Yep. That's,
and I think, you know, so kind of what you just said there a little bit, when it's, you know, the human mind and brain is manipulated easily, and it's,
that's know. Yeah, that's true. You can have a big impact on, you know, that's, yeah, it's interesting. One word.
Right. Cool. Okay, second question here. If you were going to be reincarnated and you had the opportunity to choose to be male, female, or a third gender, which had no societal expectations or rules attached to it, what would you choose to be and why?
That's a good one.
That's a damn good question.
So is this in a world where all three of those gender types exist?
I'm assuming so. Yeah. This is all I have. This is the, I
so
think
if
the key
I
point,
chose option number three, I'd still be living in a world with men, women, and a
third
non-gender as
third
well.
Non-binary. I think the key to this question is which had no societal expectations or rules.
Right.
So not this world.
Yeah,
because
so
clearly
that,
there's some fucked up
right.
expectations and rules going on that need to be smoothed out. But
well, it's interesting because my first thought is, well, in that world, if it's going to be okay to be either one. You know what I mean? And I mean, I would just be,
so yes,
I'm indifferent at that point.
Let's talk about the question just to make sure we're clear and on the same page. It sounds like in this world, you can be whatever the hell you want to be and nobody's going to care.
Right. Right. Then, you know,
but what, okay. So let's talk about that a little bit. 'Cause then if that's the case, now we're just talking about the physical self.
Right.
Is that, I mean, you know, if when we're boiling down, okay, there's no expectations or rules. So that means really is the difference then just the physical self between men, women, and non-binary?
Right.
Or your perception. I guess it really comes down to your perception of the, it's a fucking hard question.
I was just thinking you've got to have a past bias if that with that question. It's hard not to.
Right. So, but let's say you could enter a world in which you society's not going to tell you what to be.
Right.
That's not this world, so it's hard to.
My first answer, my first quick, if I had to quick, you know, answer very quickly, would just be a male, because that's what I'm familiar with. Yeah. I have that bias, and I know what it is. In an ideal world, you know, it's like if I picture this like utopian society, you know, that's just like perfect. Maybe go with number three, where there's like non-gender, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just an equal, you know, if everybody was like an equal, it's really interesting.
So maybe let's,
because that's how I think it should be. So
maybe let's assume then if you pick three, you know, the non-binary third gender or whatever that is.
Right.
That you're not really prone to embrace either maleness or femaleness.
Right. Right.
This is a hard question.
I can put it in my mind that sounds great. That sounds ideal. That would take a lot of like complications out of things, you know, for general society.
But
like,
there are no, in this scenario, there are no societal expectations or rules attached to it.
Right. Yeah, that's true. So you can't go in with that past bias, like of what I know of our society. You know what I mean? So,
you know, I think I would pick male.
Yeah.
In this, so my background is biology, exercise science, and a lot of that stuff in the human body.
Right.
And I am 100% fully willing to recognize that it is physiologically much easier to be a male.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, we don't deal with menstrual cycles. We don't deal with pregnancy. We don't deal with
discrimination.
You know, that would come from society.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just saying from a biology standpoint.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And I know that
we got it easy.
I know I'm probably going to get in trouble for ignoring that third gender part, but I'm trying to talk about biology only here.
Right.
So I'm saying men have it way the fuck easier than women.
Definitely.
With things, you know, even like, you know, like I'm 30 now. And when you start trying to date women who are coming into their 30s and mid 30s. There's a different, they feel a much different pressure around relationships.
For sure.
Because their biological clock is ticking.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've been
told pressure.
Oh yeah. And I've been told that where it's, you know, women feel it.
Right.
It's just, so I think, I mean, I admire women to the utmost, but I think I would be a male. As long as there's no expectations and rules attached to it.
Right.
Because all those fucking expectations and rules now make me really uncomfortable.
I'm really the type that I can find a good answer for each of those answers. You
sure.
know what I mean?
Oh, I
for
mean,
each
yeah,
of those options, like an ideal.
And that's fair. Like, I agree. I agree. I like...
I see the appeal of each.
I see the appeal. Like, I think I would love to be a woman in that I would be a more loving person. Like, I
know,
generally
yeah.
find women to be more loving and giving and
there's a woman out there going, hell no.
hell no. But so I like to access that side of me now, but now we're talking a little bit about femininity and masculinity as opposed to gender
coming from a male side.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's really complicated, the gender issue right now. So I'm trying to be sensitive to everybody, but
if I had to, what I, you know. Yeah, if you're right. When it comes to biology, pros and cons. Yeah. Male would be, you know, the easier option.
Yeah, and we fully recognize, ladies, that we have it pretty fucking easy.
Yeah.
You know. That's a really interesting question, though.
Yeah, good question.
Do you think
I just like those questions that make you think like that?
Well, I hadn't really ever thought about that.
No, me neither.
I mean, I've always thought that women biologically have a bit of a tougher road than we do.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I don't know.
Aside from, yeah.
Sometimes I hear stories and I'm like, you went through what? You did what? I'm like, fuck.
Yeah.
Not for me. But, and, you know, it makes me admire them even more because they're just so strong and they push through a lot more shit than we have to. So, but with all that said, male. Take the easier path. Cool. So usually I do kind of like quick hitter questions. I have three quick hitter questions, the same ones I do for everybody. But since we're going to do another episode, I think I'll save those.
All right.
And it'll be a little more relevant at that time.
Cool. Close it out.
Cool. So until next time, my man, thanks for coming on with me.
No problem. Thanks for having me on. It was fun.
All right. Love you, buddy.
Love you.
Love you. You know, listen back to that several times, and each time it makes me feel like, kind of just makes me feel like a boy camping in the backyard, playing video games, eating orange slices, no cares in the world, just complete presence. And thinking about it now, you know, I'm not sure how many, I haven't asked any guests, but how many guys have guy friends with whom they can just talk for hours on end about nothing, just about life, existentially, about silliness. But that guy for me is Tommy. Whenever we talk, it's just hours and hours and hours, or all day. There's just such an ease in the conversation, and I just always feel like I'm in the flow with this guy. I was actually just chatting with him the other day and mentioned I started watching Battlestar Galactica for the first time, early 2000s show, and sure enough, he started watching at the same damn time, and we were just both laughing about it, and off we go, talking about Battlestar Galactica, and how, what the ideal watch order is, and just silliness, and I just love the guy. So thanks for joining me for this part. Part one, Tommy, love you, buddy. Feeling good and excited about getting the next one out for y'all to enjoy, so... And remember, don't forget to check in with yourself this week. Let me know how it goes. Email again, mmprojectpod@gmail.com, and on Twitter, @mmprojectpod. All right. Love y'all. And until next time, be present, stay open, much love.
And so there came a point in our evolution when we didn't guide life by distrusting our instincts, and had to think about it, and had to purposely arrange and discipline and push our lives around in accordance with foresight and words and systems of symbols, accountancy, calculation, and so on. And then we worry. Once you start thinking about things, you worry as to whether you've thought enough. Where we're going, there are things for the eye to see. Thank you.
say goodbye. Open wide, open up your mind. Let all of your spirit flow. We'll be right back.